the bleacher preacher Jerry Pritikin. From SNL and the movie Superbad, Horatio Sands and Joe Nunez. And former Cubs bat boy Walter Jacobson. And now here's your host, a man who is charging a cover to watch the Cubs from his couch, Justin Kaufman.
Why not, right? Why not? Big couch, 200. Little couch, 75. Ottoman, 15. Everybody's charging cover charges these days, right? Why can't I get into the action? Hello, everybody. It's Justin Kaufman with you here on the download till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a wonderful show lined up for you tonight as we continue to celebrate and really explore Cubs culture here in Chicago. It's World Series week here on the download. We've had some great, great stuff. Bob Newhart was on the show last night. Check it out on WGNRadio.com. Night before, Joe Mantegna was on. That's what I love about it. I love that celebrities that you can't really get. It's not like Bob Newhart. I'm like, call him up at any point and be like, yeah, I'd love to talk to you, Bob, just about your career. Doesn't work that way. But they are receptive to talking about their favorite baseball team, the Chicago Cubs. I think that's great. And tonight's no exception. Now, we've heard from so many great people this week. Last night, we had Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy was on the show. I mean, we've talked to former Cubs, 69 Cubs, both Fergie Jenkins and Randy Huntley. Come on, man. I know you probably missed a lot of it because you were actually watching the World Series, but check out the downloads page. We've been hustling. A lot of, what's up, Jim? We're trying to get, if we just really want to talk about Cubs culture. A lot of emails like that. A lot of talking to, a lot of the celebrities must have told their PR people, no interviews except if it's about the Cubs. That seems to be what we're getting tonight or all this week. And it doesn't stop. Tonight we have a huge show. Joining us tonight on the show, Ike Barinholtz is going to be with us. Ike Barinholtz from the Mindy Project. He was in Suicide Squad as well as Sisters, Neighbors 1 and 2. He's a great kid from Wrigleyville. Grew up right outside of Wrigley Field. Coming back this weekend, we'll talk with him about being a Cubs fan, growing up a Cubs fan, what the Cubs fandom means. It's not just about hope. It's not just about losing. It's about family, as we're finding out. I mean, we heard last night from Randy Hundley. That's what, I mean, you heard him kind of choke up when talking about going to the game with his family.
Yeah, you made him cry.
I'm going to have to put that on my reel. is that thing anymore? No, but it really is. I mean, that's there's something I love about doing this show and you know, being able to sort of veer or take the whole download experience to one topic. We've done this a lot. We did it with when we talk about education. We've done it when we talk about politics, elections. We've done it when the James Beard Awards were in town, we talked to all the different chefs about what it means to be an award-winning chef. Well, it's no different. Talk about what it means to be a Cubs fan as we continue that. And so many threads come out, and to have Randy Hundley and others talk about family, Bob Newhart talk about what it means generations to all be able to almost be able to enjoy something together. In this case, it's futility, but the concept being there's an association to it. And we're going to continue that tonight. Ike Barinholtz will join us. Also joining us tonight, Jerry Pritikin, the bleacher preacher. He begged his dad to take him to a game, a World Series game, when he was 8 years old in 1945. You know what his dad said? Great story. His dad said, next year. If you're a Cubs fan and you've been in Wrigley Field any time since 1985 to now, you know the bleacher preacher. He's out there trying to convert the opposing fans, which is great. It's a great. We'll talk to him about what it means to be the bleacher preacher in the World Series. He's going to have a lot of converting to do. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Cleveland Indian fans at the park this weekend. Also tonight, we'll talk with Horatio Sands and Joseph Nunez. Horatio, of course, SNL cast member from Chicago. Joe Nunez as well from Chicago in movies like Superbad, 40-Year-Old Virgin, those kind of movies. He's been all over the place. These guys, such Cubs fans, living in L.A., they noticed this summer. They were like, you know what? Something is happening. And so they got on the horn, or Airbnb, I don't know what it is these days, and essentially they rented an apartment. They said, we're going to, this is a few months ago, they'll talk about it. They said, We know they're going to the World Series, so why don't we get dibs on a Wrigleyville apartment now, a block from the field, so we have a place to hang out? And they did. Put their lives on hold to come to Chicago, and it's worked out pretty well. And so we'll talk with Horatio and Joe about their experiences of being sort of ex-Chicagoans back in Wrigleyville for the month of October. Also tonight, I mean, it keeps going. Why not get a bat boy? You want to get a bat boy? Before he was on the news, he was a bat boy. Walter Jacobson was a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs in 1953. Before he was on the news, before he was giving us his perspective, he was picking up bats. No-name Chicago Cubs. I don't know any 1953 Chicago Cubs. Do you, Pete? Off the top of your head, can you think of anyone on that team? I'm sure people right now are like, oh, that's it. Kauffman has crossed the line. I know the entire lineup. I think Bob Newhart was giving us the whole 45 team in his interview. But we will talk with Walter Jacobson about his experiences, both as a fan, as a newscaster, but also as a bat boy, a member of the Chicago Cubs organization, spending a summer, two summers, breaking the rules at Wrigley Field. We'll talk with him as well. Also, you know, there's been a ton made about cover charges. We've heard all about it all week long, about how some of the bars in Chicago, we talked about it last night, the more corporate feel where people are putting cover charges to get in, premiums on tables, they're doing food packages, all in the hundreds and almost to thousands of dollars to be able to watch a Cubs game on Clark Street. But you know what? It wasn't always that way. Clark Street used to be a tavern street. It used to be so many different bars that we know. Pete and I talked about it last night, whether it be Bernie's or Wrigleyville Tap. But even before that, we had the guys from Naked Ray Gun in here. They're talking about how they used to play Cubby Bear, Urge Overkill. There was a different Wrigleyville in the 80s, you know, surrounding the Chicago Cubs. So we'll talk about how that has changed with Liz Garibay and Bill Savage, both in studio to talk about the history of the taverns in Wrigleyville and Clark Street and around that area. Nisei Lounge will definitely come up as one of the lounges that's still intact right there at, what is that, Sheffield and Clark, Roscoe. So we'll talk about that. And also, you know what? We cannot explore Cubs culture without bringing back Colleen Henneman, the drunk Cubs fan. You can check her out. She's gone viral, who is probably waiting right now as we speak. We'll check in with her live to get into one of the Wrigleyville bars. She's got to get a good spot for tomorrow. So why not start tonight, right? All that tonight. Huge show. Also, Sam Panionovich on the Bulls. My Bulls starting up tonight. This is a great time to be a sports fan in Chicago, that's for sure. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, we got a big show tonight here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Why don't we get things kicking off with the carryout? This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Aldermen are still mad at the Cubs and, you know, ethics for not being able to get face value World Series tickets. They've cried poor, saying they don't get paid enough to afford the jacked up ticket prices on the free market. Yeah, I can relate. I can't afford them either since I got that new tax bill to pay for the pension funds that were raided by you. So, sorry you can't go. Sucks, right? A list of Wrigleyville bars are stepping up to let patrons know they don't have a cover. The big story yesterday talked about huge door charges to come watch a game, although I'm not sure how accurate that story was. The more I think about it, why wouldn't they charge people? I mean, my guess is that Chicagoans, and I know Chicagoans, they've been rolling up to Wrigleyville hours before games and squatting on tables with lines like, I'm fine with this water. Either way, I think we all can agree on one thing. I haven't heard of half the bars they're talking about. And I'm not going to watch a Cubs game in Wrigleyville anyway, right? That's gross. Here's a fun story for you. The Russians, they were hacked today. A top aide to Vladimir Putin was hacked and the emails were released. And you get to see that the Putin government had their fingerprints all over the separatist movement in Ukraine. How does that feel? I think Putin, he should just put the blame on Hillary, right? That's what we do here. I mean, she does know how to rig up private servers. She's good at bulk erasing emails, right? She did it. Definitely. The FCC just came up with some digital privacy rules to help consumers. Yep, to make sure that broadband companies can't use your information like mobile location, browsing history, and app usage. When hearing this, the government was like, hey, FCC, whose side are you on? Don't you have some shock jocks to find? Big news in the tech world. Twitter lays off 9% of its workforce and kills Vine Video. What's next? They're going to trim the 140 characters? We really can only afford 125. Is that just, it's where we're at. In weather, it's cold. But what's this nonsense? It's supposed to be clear and in the 70s this weekend and on Halloween? What alternative universe are we living in here? That's ridiculous. It's supposed to be nasty on Halloween. That's the Chicago way. In sports, the Cubs return to Wrigley tomorrow for Game 3 of the World Series. Wow. The big positive sideshow has been Kyle Schwarber, but tough news today as the Cubs' medical staff said he's not cleared to play the field. He's still recovering from a knee injury. They let him hit as a DH in Cleveland, but now he's got to play the field to play at Wrigley. Good. Well, can the medical staff also make a ruling on Schwarber's half goatee? I mean, does he not have a girlfriend at home to tell him that that's not a good look? I mean, he's a World Series hero. He's going to look back on these memories and be like, oh, God, so embarrassed. Trust me, I know. Anything where I'm 22 with a goatee, I'm just like, oh, flip the page. Oh, can't believe I used Flickr. Kyle Hendricks goes to the mound for Game 3. Hey, question, will Jason Hayward be in the lineup? Also, what can the Cubs get for him this offseason? That's all I'm thinking about right now. I know, trade him to the Southsiders. They love big, unmovable contracts. The Chicago Bulls get underway tonight against the Celtics. Not an easy win, of course, but I like this Bulls team. I'm very optimistic. Although, I'll be honest, I haven't seen them play at all. But still, it's the characters. D-Wade, he's married to Gabrielle Union. Jimmy Butler hangs out with Marky Mark. Robin Lopez was on stage with Mariah Carey in Vegas. Rajon Rondo. I mean, he's Rajon Rondo. This team is more like the Lakers than the Lakers. It means they're going to be like 15 games under 500. But still, I'm all in. Go Bulls. The Triv reports today that Bears coach John Fox is done with Jay Cutler. After this year, of course. I guess he told his friends and they told the paper. Cool friends. When coach John Fox was asked about Cutler yesterday, he said, you know what? We really don't have any other choice. There's that vote of confidence that you love to hear from your boss. Jay Cutler starts against the Vikings on Monday night. I'm so done with this soap opera drama at Halas Hall. I mean, you're 1-6. Why are reporters even going up there anymore? If newspapers were really working on robots covering sports in the future, why not try it out with the Bears right now? Right? That being said, it would be awesome if Cutler played well on Monday and then went on a huge winning streak just to make John Fox's friends squirm. Bears finish on a huge streak but still miss the playoffs, right? Or go 1-15. One of the two. Not sure yet. And finally tonight, scientists haven't been able to cure cancer, but they did get to the bottom of cranberry juice. It turns out it has no effect on preventing or curing urinary tract infections. What? Can we not have anything anymore? Next, you're going to tell me that eating my scabs doesn't help with acid reflux. It doesn't? Ugh. That's the carryout for October 27, 2016. Hey, if you want to avoid a cover charge, we don't have one here. But our wings? Yeah, $35. All right, more to come here on The Download. Walter Jacobson in studio. Life from a bad boy. That's right. 1953. Talk about Walter's role with the Chicago Cubs. All that coming up here. 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, man, if I were any better, I'd be Kyle Schwarber.
Schwarb's got it. He's got to be feeling it, though. He's, like, probably mad. Like I said in the carryout, hopefully he'll have time to reflect his facial hair choices. You know, like he'll have a little bit of time in the dugout to be like, you know, maybe I need to get rid of this half goatee.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that little crop duster is doing down there, but
I mean, he's a kid. You know he's going to look back and they're going to be like, remember 2016, Kyle Schwarber. And he's going to be like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. Why didn't anyone tell me?
I meant to Google this last night. Schwarbs is already a legend in his short time here in Chicago. What was the name of the singing group he was with in high school? Yeah, were they like the Purple Violets or the Lavenders or something like that?
I don't even know. That's great. I got to look that up.
Yeah, remember that?
See, he's got an acapella group.
Yeah. He was good, man. He was up there belting it out.
He seems to be, I mean, it's pretty amazing that he's been able to just jump right back in. And I don't even mean, like, in terms of his athletic ability, but his opportunity to actually give, like, to have chemistry with the team. Yeah. You, as a fan, I'm like, I forgot he missed the whole year.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing to me that he's just like, boom, back in. Everyone loves him. He's back in. That's it.
It's so funny because you're right. You know, there were issues of timing and what he may or may not be able to do at the plate. He had that one at bat where he looked kind of wonky, and then the next one looked much more comfortable and then started making contact.
Zimmerman looked it up. It's the Purple Pizzazz.
Thank you, Pete.
That is a good name.
Purple Pizzazz.
The Purple Pizzazz. That's got to be his nickname. If we were doing Picnic with Schwarber, the Purple Pizzazz. That's good. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, celebrating Cubs culture all week long here on 720 WGN as the Cubs come back to Wrigley Field tomorrow night for the for the first World Series game at Wrigley Field since 1945. That's a pretty, pretty impressive, I don't know, there's a lot of emotion involved in that. Well, a guy in studio with us now, a diehard Cubs fan who has a little experience with Wrigley Field as a bat boy in 1952 and 1953, which breaks the rules. You know him from all those years you invited him into your living room. Now he works here at WGN. Walter Jacobson, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, man.
Oh, and thanks for inviting me. And, you know, it's a scary time for people like me who've been around the Cubs all of our lives. You know, I'm going on 80 years old. I've been a Cub fan since literally 1945 when I was listening to the Cubs play the Tigers in the World Series, and I've never let it go. You can't let it go. And if you're into it that deep, when they go to Cleveland and lose that first game 6-0 or whatever it was, you think, oh, my God, it's over. I can't listen to it.
I turn it off.
And I have absolutely, I'll tell you, Justin, no interest at all in going to Wrigley Field.
Really?
To sit there Saturday or Sunday.
Why not?
And squirm and worry and sweat and be afraid. Much better at home, so if things are happening that are not very comfortable for me, I could turn it off, or I can go away for a while and come back.
Well, you know, it's always been, I've always known this story. I've known that Walter Jacobson was a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs. It's almost like the lead in your bio. Right. But I've never really talked to you about it, and I don't know much about it. And we were thinking about, you know, the week of the World Series week here on the download, and that came to our mind saying, you know, we should talk to Walter about his story. This 1952... Talk about how do you become a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs?
It's an interesting story, really. You've never been a bat boy?
No, I'm not.
Have any interest in being a bat boy?
I haven't, no. I mean, sure, when I was a kid, yeah. Not now.
I was a kid. I just one day wrote a letter to P.K. Wrigley. I'll go back a little bit before that. My mother was a diehard, horrendous, loyal Cub fan. And we had a small apartment, my dad, my mom, and me and a younger brother. And my mother would be listening to the games, and I kind of got acclimated to her fandom. And when the Cubs were playing the Tigers and getting licked, she was sad, so I was sad. But I got hooked. And the next year, the next season, I used to take the elevated from Devon Avenue to Addison Street. I was only 9 years old, and I must have gone to 50 Cub games during the summer. And I would talk my way by the Andy Frayne ushers or jump over the stiles.
The turnstiles,
and get in,
right, or get in after the seventh inning. That was a thing. Right,
Yeah, going just kind of bananas over the Cubs. And one day I wrote a letter to P.K. Wrigley. Out of the blue, I don't even know why. I just wanted so much to be a bat boy. I wrote him a letter and telling him how loyal I was and could I please one day maybe have a chance at being a bat boy. He had his public relations department write me back right away, actually, and say thank you for your loyalty. And we'd love to have you come and see us sometimes, but we already have our bat boy for this season. So I waited till the next season and I wrote again. Then I got a letter from the public relations department saying, come down and talk to us. So my dad had to drive me down to Wrigley Field. I was only 13 years old. I certainly couldn't drive the car myself. And he didn't want anything to do with it because he thought, I mean, come on, this is Walter just being Walter and there's nothing we can do about it. The chances of being a bat boy are just absolutely remote. So he parked out on Sheffield Avenue and I went in shaking to see the guy who's in charge of hiring bat boys. And I went into his office and sat for 20 minutes and he was asking me these crazy questions like, where do you go to school? How would you get out of school in order to come and be a bat boy during the season? And what are your grades? And then he asked me, how tall are you? And how much do you weigh? And I'm thinking, Justin, my God, I'm thinking, could he be thinking about a uniform for me? I didn't say that, but I just gave him the information. He said, thank you. Very nice to meet you. We shook hands, and I left. My dad was out in front. This was about a half hour, 45 minutes later, and I got in the car, and he said, what happened? And I said, oh, Dad, my God, it was really exciting. I mean, I thought that they were going to think really about maybe giving me that job or letting me come and hang out in the clubhouse. And they asked me, when I told them, they asked me my size and my height and my age and my weight. He said, you know, maybe
there's
they
something
are.
To it. Yeah.
That was in about October of 1951. And I didn't hear anything. I used to get up every morning and turn on the radio and wait all morning. And I'd go to bed at night and say my prayers. I will be good if only they would call me and give me the job. And they never did. And I waited and I waited. And then it got to be after winter in January or February. Still no call. And one day, I used to listen to Burt Wilson and Cubs News. I forgot now what WYND, I think the station was. I don't really remember. Anyway, I turned it on one night after dinner, and I heard Upson has been named as the new Cubs bat boy for the 1952 season.
They do not. They say the bat boy in the radio news?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that was great.
Well, there was the Cubs news and everything about the Cubs.
Oh, it was Cubs. Okay.
And
That must have been devastating.
Oh, crushed. Absolutely crushed. And in tears, I went to my mom and dad in the dining room and said, well, you don't have to worry about it. It's over. And so they gave me some sympathy. Empathy. And then all of a sudden, Justin, the phone started to ring and ring and ring, and people telling me that they just heard on the radio that I was the new Cubs bat boy.
What?
Because I had heard Upson and I didn't hear Jacob. So it was just Upson. So I said, my mother now was getting upset because what if this was true? And she called Wrigley Field the next morning. I don't know to whom she spoke. But she said that her son has been named as bat boy, thinks he's been named as bat boy for the Cubs. Is that true? And they told her, whoever it was
indeed.
Who answered the phone, yes, it is Walter.
Wow.
So,
Walter, I have to
take a break.
We'll take a break because I need to call all the other guests that are on the show tonight and bump them because we're doing 4 hours of you talking about the 1952 season. This is riveting. Walter Jacobson, my guest tonight, talking about his fame story of being a Cubs bat boy in the 1952 season. When we come back, let's talk about what it was like. What it was like being in the dugout. What was being around baseball in the 50s. I mean, I can't even imagine some of the things that were said and done in the 50s that you can't.
You got it. Good and bad.
Good and bad. Walter Jacobson, my guest on the download. Stay with us.
When the day comes for that last winning run, and I'm crying and covered in beer, I look to the sky and know I was right to think someday we'll go all the way.
It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're celebrating Cubs culture this week of the World Series. Walter Jacobson in studio talking about his great story, his famed story of being a bat boy for the 1952 Chicago Cubs. So you get the call. You're now a bat boy. Talk about that experience. Talk about getting in there, wearing the uniform and the players. And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, geez, early 50s. What is that? Willie Mays? Stan Musial?
Warren Spahn?
Jackie Robinson?
Roy Campanella?
So talk about the experience.
Well, let me tell you first. Let me set the scene for you first. My family moved from Rogers Park to Glencoe when I was a preteen. So when I got this job, I had to get from New Trier High School, where I was a freshman, down to Wrigley
Field. That's a long commute.
Yeah. And I had to get there, first of all, while school was still on in the spring. So I had to figure out a way, get my parents to help me go to Nutria and say, look, will you let my son miss his classes in the afternoon? He's got this job as a bat boy. And the school was reluctant but willing, which is understandable. It was kind of cool for them to have a bat boy in their of their classes. So I used to get on the North Shore train at 8 o'clock in the morning during the summer. Parenthetically, in the spring, I would finish my classwork at about 9 or 10 and then get on the train and go down. And the first thing I had to do when I got down there is take the trunk in the ramp to the dugout from the clubhouse and unload about 50 bats and put them in the bat rack.
You were the bat boy, after all.
That's right. Put them in, and wait for them to start their batting practice. That, after it was started, was my heaven, because I could go into the outfield and play catch with these guys who kind of took me on as a mascot. We'd play catch and we'd talk and I'd shag fly balls and I made friends. You won't remember any of the names, but I can just tell you this, that some of them were so nice. Roy Smalley, does that name ring a bell? He was a shortstop. He was traded to make room for Ernie Banks, who came 2 years later. He just couldn't get the job done. He would throw the ball into a double play and drop it before he could get rid of it. The Cubs had in history Tinker to Evers to Chance.
Right,
you've heard that?
Yeah, of course.
They were a famous double play combination. The media in Chicago created Smalley to Mixus, or Mixus to the shortstop Smalley to the grandstand, because Roy Smalley would throw away. And I used to cry, because I felt so bad for him. He'd put his arm around me and say, you know, Wally, don't worry about it. I'll make it up tomorrow, which he didn't. So there were some guys that I really loved, like Roy Smalley. Some guys were very difficult. You know, those were the days. You've seen the movies about Jackie Robinson and stuff.
I was going to say, just the quote-unquote locker room talk in 1952 must have been something.
Not quite as bad as Donald Trump's, but there was locker room talk, and there was dugout screaming, and they used to throw epithets at the black guys. It was Jackie Robinson and a few others by then. The Dodgers won the pennant that year, and the Yankees beat them in the World Series, but they had several black guys, Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson. And the Cub players, those were the ones I knew best, and I'm sure they weren't the only ones. I found out the following year when I was visiting Bat Boy that they were not the only ones, used to throw out racist remarks. It was just
it was a different time,
awful.
Right?
Yeah, and you know, those were the days when spitting tobacco was something everybody was doing, so there was tobacco all over the dugout. They were really kind of hicks.
And this, I mean, talk about, I mean, it was, you know, for you as a bat boy, I mean, were they like, hey, Wally, give me this, give me that? Was it, did it just kind of like almost boss you around? And like, what was he, I mean, you said you had good experiences, but you also, some of them weren't so good.
Well, there wasn't too much bossing around they could do, because I was always on the run, and they were kind of kind to me, because I wasn't a show off like I think
some of those other bat boys
Baez
were.
Is now. And Wilson Contreras. Why don't those guys just cool it and play the game instead of running around looking for fame and fortune? I got annoyed at them the other night. Anyway, they weren't. The worst they did to me personally was razz me a little bit and spit tobacco at me and force tobacco in my mouth so I would chew it. Not awful.
I know. But let me ask you. I mean, it's interesting, because you're telling me, you know, I mean, it's a different time. I mean, there's a lot of mopping. It was a little laundry. There are things that, I mean, as you got more and more comfortable in the dugout, I mean, you could do a lot of things with the Cubs. I mean, you kind of were talking about the idea of signing baseballs.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a responsibility. My responsibility was to keep the bats in order. My responsibility when the game was over was to get up to the clubhouse in a hurry, pick up all their dirty sweatshirts and underwear and put them in the washing machine, and then mop the floor while they were showering. And then I would first sweep it, then mop it. Then when the clothes dried, I'd take them out and put them in their lockers. And I would swab out the urinals and the toilets and the sinks.
So glamorous.
Yeah, it was really glamorous.
1952
and
glamorous.
You know what I was paid?
What?
$2.50 a day. You know what it cost me? $2.75 to get there from Glencoe, where I got the North Shore train.
Man.
And then I wouldn't get out of there until like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. There were
These
no night
day games
at that
Yeah,
point.
Right, of course. Yeah. All right, to the balls. He's signing balls, baseballs.
Oh,
so you know, as much as you like to, you know, oh, it's the great American bat boy. You also had a little bad boy
little
streak.
Bad boy, yeah.
So, tell us about this.
Bat boy, bad boy. You know, I was just so fanatical a Cub fan. That was the next year. You have to know how I happened to, when I was in the Cubs dugout and the clubhouse, one of my jobs was to go downstairs to the shop and pick up bags of baseballs that the Cubs signed. And then the balls were put back in the boxes, and I would take them back downstairs, and they were sold. And I had to take a ball and go around to all the players. And if I didn't get all the balls signed, you know, I was kind of reprimanded. So I spent a lot of time practicing their signatures. So if I had, and I could still do them. If I couldn't get Hank Sauer to sign a ball because he was too busy, too much of a big
you
shot.
You had to do it.
I did it.
There's someone right now who's listening is like, oh, my Hank Sauer ball.
Right.
Wally.
That's right. I'm afraid that I might get prosecuted for hopefully the statute of limitations.
Nah, this is off the record.
But I didn't do a lot. Yeah, this is off the record.
Yeah, it's off the record.
I didn't do much of it.
No.
But I did do it now and
now,
then.
Now, let me ask you this, because this is you actually, you know, to be a bat boy at Wrigley Field, you get one summer. It's not something that you stick around for 5 years. But you found a loophole. You were able to do two summers by switching dugouts. Talk about this.
Wrigley had a policy, because so many kids wanted to be bat boys, that the Cubs would hire one bat boy for one season, and that would be it. And I was told that after the season, it was over. Parenthetically, that was like Bill Curtis and I going back to WBBM a couple of years
ago,
right, having been told, okay, we want you to come back just for a little old time's sake.
Right.
And then we were doing okay at 5 o'clock at night together. This was, what, 5 years ago?
Right.
And the ratings weren't too bad, and we wanted to stay because we were having a good time. And they said, we told you 2 years, and that's it. Anyway, so the Cubs had a policy. I was so good at my work, Justin, because of how much I loved doing it, that I just couldn't take no for an answer. And I begged, and I cajoled, and I promised I'd do whatever they want if they'd let me stay another year. They couldn't do it. But because you do a pretty good job at what you're doing, Walter, we'll send you over to the visiting side, and you can be bat boy, please, for all the teams that come in.
So they get a bat boy for Wrigley as well.
Oh, yeah, all the travel.
Yeah,
it's not many teams, but now they don't do it at all, bring in their own bat boys. But and they weren't even doing it very much in those days. And I was reluctant because of how much of a Cub fan I was, but it was in Wrigley Field, and the visiting teams were so good. I mean, they were really great.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest players
of all
time.
The glory days of baseball, yeah.
Yeah. So I went over there. The first problem was having to fit into uniforms that were three times my size that the teams brought with them. And then I had to be careful not to
be too Cub.
Right.
Right?
But I,
was that hard for you as a kid? I mean,
you kind of
mentioned to me that you were even helping the team in some ways.
I was smart enough to at least control my emotions and do my little things on the side. Like I'd sit in the, I don't know if I had to admit this, I sit in the dugout and listen to the other team's coaches talking to the players about the signals. And then I'd get up, wander around the dugout. And I was 16, remember? Okay. And then I would kind of leave the ramp and go over to the Cubs and tell the Cubs I knew what the signals were. I don't know if it made much difference, but I got caught a couple times. One time, it was really bad, actually. Russ Meyer was a hothead. He played on the Brooklyn Dodgers. And he saw me
doing
listening.
It,
yeah. And he took a bat out of the rack. These guys are, you know, they're roughnecks, right? Took a bat out of the rack and swung it with all his might at my head. And it hit, luckily, or not so luckily, hit the cement post holding up the dugout and broke in two. If the post hadn't been there, it would have hit me in the head. So they're really into this, and they were angry.
Wow.
And the Rogers Hornsby, remember that name?
Of course.
He was manager of the Cincinnati Reds. And he got a notion that I was listening. And he he sent me out to the bullpen and made me stay out there. You know, the bat boy usually sits in the dugout,
right,
and grabs the bat and goes up to home plate. He made me sit out in the bullpen and said, if I ever catch you listening to anything again, you'll be fired. And I probably should have been fired right then and there. And you know what?
This is great.
Bottom line, it didn't make the Cubs win the pennant.
Almost, right? Walter Jacobson, my guest tonight. You can stick around. You want to stick around?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, stick around. We got a great show tonight celebrating Cubs culture. I wouldn't mind if Walter Jacobson rode shotgun tonight on the download. It's kind of great. I mean, that was an amazing story talking about your time in 1952 and 1953 as a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs. Walter Jacobson here on the download. Thanks for sharing that story, bud.
My pleasure.
Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs. Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs.
Thanks, Rob. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With till 11 o'clock tonight, we got a great show about the Cubs culture. It's World Series week here in the 720 WGN. Coming up, Horatio Sands, Joe Nunez. Talk about coming all the way from L.A., renting a home. Just like within houses of Wrigley Field. Did this with the idea, knowing that this team was going to go to the World Series. They did this a couple months ago. They said, yeah, you know what? Let's take a shot at it. So that'll be coming up. Also, Ike Barinholtz, who's a Hollywood. He's on television, Mindy Project. He's also in the movie Suicide Squad, Sisters, Neighbors. He grew up in Wrigleyville. He's coming back this weekend, so we'll talk to him about being a lifelong Cub fan. Two lifelong Cub fans in studio with me. Now, my next guest, known as the Bleacher Preacher, and he's been going to Cubs games since he was 8 years old. Jerry Pritikin is well known around the friendly confines. His job, to convert the opposite team's fans. He's been out in the bleachers since 1985, and he's among thousands of Cubs fans that are waiting for this weekend like a kid on Christmas morning. One of the original bleacher bums, Jerry Pritikin, the Bleacher Preacher, is with us now. Thanks for being here, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Hey, I love to be here.
And Walter Jacobson, of course, sticking around tonight. I love it. I'm riding shotgun, talking Cubs culture with the former bat boy from 1952. All right, so, Jerry, let me ask you about this. You know, I kind of teased it out at the beginning, the idea that, you know, you had asked your dad when you were 8 years old to say, hey, can we go to the World Series?
Well, actually, what happened just before that was I went to a summer camp up in Round Lake, Illinois. We thought that was far away. And when I came back, while at camp, World War II came to an end. And when I got home, my father gave me a two-wheel Schwinn bike and a J.C. Higgins mitt. And that's not a ball player. That was Sears brand. And it was $8.95. He never let me forget how much he paid for it. And then gave me a crash course in Baseball 101, Cubs history, how to keep a scorecard. And then took me out to beautiful Wrigley Field. And that was like going into the Grand Canyon of baseball. And the scoreboard, of course, I'm much smaller at that time, looked much bigger than it. Well, it looked great. And from that point, I was hooked. I was hooked.
You know, for you, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Wrigley Field means a lot to you. You've been there so many times. We'll talk about your career in the bleachers, if you will, as the Bleacher Preacher. But not only that, but just as a kid. I mean, going to baseball, you and your brother going there and actually getting paid by the team to flip the seats and clean the bleachers. Talk about your experiences with Wrigley Field before being the Bleacher Preacher.
Well, I'll tell you, when my father didn't take me to the World Series the following years, that's when my brother and I started cleaning up the ballpark. And I remember just before going back to school, and it had to be late August, when we cleaned, one kid would pick up the seat and someone else with the broom would push it into a burlap bag, and we would go all the way down the line. And I remember this one kid looking at the left field foul pole, and a pennant from the championship year was there. And I remember him saying, "Wait till next year." And that was the first time I ever heard that expression. And who knew that I would keep hearing it for 71 years.
71 years. You know, Jerry, you went to San Francisco for a number of years, and you really caught the attention of you know, a lot of people because you were such a Cub fan at Candlestick at the old San Francisco Park. But when you came back to Chicago, you took on this this persona, the Bleacher Preacher. Where's it come from?
Well, actually, I got involved in a play called Bleacher Bums in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be a six-week run, and it ran for a year and a half, and I was handling the publicity. And I pat myself on the back because the Bill Veeck in me came out. And I started doing crazy promotions, created the Butterfinger as the official candy bar of the Cubs. And I got Andy Frayn Usher uniforms here when I came in for a vacation and took back, and our ushers were dressed like Andy Frayn ushers. I came into this building, and there was a display in the old gallery here called 35 Years of the Cubs Dropping the Ball. That was before they owned a team. And I asked, what were they going to do with the display when they were through with it? So I talked to their PR man, Bob Sanders, and he says, what's the address of the theater? I'll send it to you. So we had a great – the show had to move from a small theater to a large theater because we were selling out. There was a baseball strike that year. I got all the writers to come to see the play because they had nothing to write about.
1981,
but
right.
I got this display, and I put it in the lobby. I have the original – well, I won't say the original, but the four yellow street signs of that surround a ballpark. And I made a lobby, Wrigley Field West, and I could always tell – when someone came into the theater, when they started looking, that they were either Chicagoans or Midwesterners.
Right.
And there was one line in the play where they mentioned Ernie Banks come out of retirement. And when the cheers go up, you can also tell who's the Cub
chair,
fans.
Right.
And like you said, there was a tremendous amount in the Bay Area.
Well, I mean, for you to, and we'll pick up, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more with Jerry Pritikin and the Bleacher Preacher. I mean, really, the culture of the bleachers at Wrigley Field, a lot of it had to do with the fact that these were day games and there were a lot of people out there that were soaking up the sun, a ton of characters, Walter, that sort of came out of that and then were almost showcased by WGN-TV, the idea that every third inning or fourth inning they'd show somebody out there doing something. It became sort of like when you think of baseball fandom and you think of baseball fans, the bleachers, the bleacher bums, the characters that hung out at Wrigley Field in the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, there's no comparison.
It was more than just a ball game. As you say, it was a culture because you can't see as well out there as you can in the grandstand or even in the upper deck. So the people who were there were not that committed to the finer points of baseball as they were joining, being comrades and pulling for the team, right?
But there was one thing also for you were between the lines and you felt part of a game when a ball was hit your way. You almost broke with the sound of a bat, a ball hitting the bat. But I loved the fact that there was space. If you wanted to lie down on a bench, you could. the betting section over in right field, they would bet on how many drops of water would come out of the vendor's box when he's selling a beer.
Yeah, right.
And there was always something going on beside a baseball game.
Jerry Pritikin, Walter Jacobson, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about Wrigley Field, the bleachers, and the Bleacher Preacher. Stay with us.
And one more thing before we leave that we'll be telling you.
We'll keep them flying high for Cubby Blue.
Well, here's to you.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Jerry Pritikin. He's the Bleacher Preacher. Talking Cubs culture all this week here on the download, 720 WGN. Walter Jacobson sticking around as well. Riding shotgun tonight. Good to see you, Walter. All right, so let's, Jerry, you know, we talked about how you sort of got to the point of being the Bleacher Preacher, but talk about what the Bleacher Preacher is. What is your what's your goal when you're out in the bleachers in 1985? You know, with the hat and the signs, what's the goal?
Well, one of the first things, my hat, that pet helmet with the propeller on it, if I see a Cardinal fan or a Braves fan or one other, and I would start in by saying, where did you get that funny-looking hat? And that breaks the ice right there. And every once in a while, I used to convert non-believers. I went through a whole ritual, put my hand on their head and say, in the name of the Father, Bill Veeck Sr., and the Son, Bill Veeck Jr., and the Holy Soul of Charlie Grimm, holy cow, you're now a Cub fan, and that allows you to stand up with Harry in the seventh inning. And I did that many times, and it was something. Of course, my signs, I would, depending on who was coming to town or what was happening. So it was all season long there was something happening, except the Cubs.
I'm surprised there were fans to convert, because what my memory was that everybody in the bleacher was a Cubs fan. No, I guess that's obviously not true, right?
Well, But that's what happened. You know, when GM started being a superstation, people used to plan their vacation from other towns to be when they were going to visit Chicago when they knew there was a homestand. And they made signs for their friends back home that they could hold.
So you got to be, you had to be careful, though. I mean, there's a lot of beer flowing out in the bleachers, and it's not a place where people want to go to get preached
to. Yeah, how do you deal with people who don't want to be part of the shtick?
Well, I really haven't had that much, bad news people. A few Cardinal fans. One once hit me over my head with his hand, I guess, and broke my solar propeller. But all in all, I got along pretty good with the, what's a Met. It was simple.
right.
I think I was Milton Berle, except out in the bleachers.
Well, I read a story today, and this was a story that Mick Dumke did in the Reader about, in the 90s, you kind of soured a little bit on the Cubs because the corporatization of the team is owned by the Tribune Company. It was a different experience, and you kind of talk about the idea that you almost led to a boycott of the Cubs.
Yes, actually, that was in 1991. They raised the price of a bleacher seat from $4 to $6, and what I was saying is that you're pricing the everyday fan out of the ballpark. And when I say there was everyday fans, there was a lot of retirees who used to come out. One of my best friends was Carmella, who lived to be over 100 years old, and she'd take two buses to get to the Wrigley Field and two buses back. And
this was the idea. The bleachers were not reserve seats. They were not something you could buy in advance. I mean, the idea was when the ballpark opened, that's when you could go get bleacher seats. It was very spontaneous. It was open for the people who wanted to come out every day.
Well, Joe Montana really hit the nail on the head when he came up with that play, because it's as close as reality as got me involved. And it was a labor of love, and you knew it wasn't always the same people there, so you could have fun doing the same thing over, but that's not the same thing for the visiting fans.
Being a preacher, were you aware of the people who came to drop ashes over the bleacher walls onto the field?
Was that a thing?
Well, my God. Yeah,
I know, right?
I got an exclusive, and I can't remember the exact year. Now I do. It's 1984. The Cubs opened up in San Francisco that year, and I was touting a restaurant on Pier 39, and I asked the PR guy from the Cubs if they can get me some Cub players, and he brought three of them with him, Gary Woods, Larry Boa, and there was this kid that I used to have conversations with myself. I looked at this guy, and I said, this is a ball player, and it was Sandberg. And while they were eating, they said, we're going to be spreading the ashes of Charlie Grimm before the first game. And I called the newspaper that night and gave him an exclusive. And ashes do happen. I don't know. Do you know the story about my father?
No, what's the story?
Oh, this goes back to 1980. I came in during the summer. My father was in his 80s, and his health was slipping, and he did slip into a coma. And he was in a coma for 30 days, and he did not say a thing for 30 days. And I was over in Evanston where he was in the hospital, and I noticed his eyes fluttering, and the next thing I know, he's mumbling. And I went over and I said, Dad, what are you saying? And this is true. He says, we got to get rid of Kingman. And that was the last thing he ever said.
Come on, that's great.
But I could understand why he said that, because he used to say to me, that King...
He's really didn't like
Dave. I got to clean it up for my dad. This Kingman be crap, because he come up with men on third base and we need a fly ball and he strike out, or hit a homer and we were already 18 runs ahead.
Terry, it's interesting because, the culture of the bleachers, whether it be the bleacher bums or what you do with the bleacher preachers or all the people you talked about who come out and spontaneously go to a game or pick up tickets there at the time, it's changed. What we're going to see in 2016 here, what we're going to see this weekend, is full price, hundreds of dollars to sit there. It's changed not only just the price of the ticket, but the experience has changed. The bleachers have become a place for flowing beer and more of a beer garden experience. It's a much, much different experience than the bleacher preacher and the bleacher bums.
I'll tell you when it all started. It started with the first night game. The crowd changed. It was a younger yuppie crowd. In fact, I created a T-shirt that said, "Warning: One yuppie is too many for any ballpark." And They came with cell phones. This is back in the 80s when hardly everybody had any. Now everybody has a cell phone except me, but they come with Rolex watches. That was a beauty before. You couldn't tell the person next to you. You couldn't tell if he was rich or poor or whatever. And once in a while, someone would come from working downtown, and they bring their attaché case, and they would take their tie off and their shirt off, and they put a T-shirt on, and they felt like one of us. But as the lights came on, the quality of the person, the crowd changed to be, they weren't really baseball-knowledge fans. And one of the things that Bill Veeck was once quoted saying, by inverse proportion of what a fan pays for a ticket was his knowledge of the game, that's changed because there aren't poor people anymore in the ballpark. And
as we wrap up, for you, you were at the NLCS. You know, the concept of the Cubs coming to Wrigley Field to play a World Series Game 3, Game 4, and Game 5. What's it mean to you, Jerry? What's it mean for all those years of going all the way back to flipping the seats and with your brother to the experiences with your dad in 45 where he says, we'll go next time, to everything that's involved with what you created in the bleachers? What's the emotion that surrounds the weekend that's coming up here?
Primarily, I always equated my youth with Wrigley Field because there was hardly any changes until the Tribune Company made some changes. But also, like Dorian Gray, I started to feel older, whereas I always felt young when I was in the bleachers. And I didn't communicate with the new people as great as I did with the everyday fan or the real baseball fan. It's a different culture. And I realize everything changes, except the Cubs, because they never won. But this year, it's different. I mean, I honestly felt, I used to say, you know, on opening day, the Cubs are going all the way, but I didn't believe it, but I didn't tell anybody. This time, this year,
you believe
there was a, right off the bat, excuse the pun, but right off the bat. And I got to tell you one quickie thing. You know, I had my 10 Fan Manments, and the original 10 Fan Manments, number 3 was honor thy trinity of tinkers ever the chance. It was changed just for this year. And it says honor thy trinity of Ricketts, Epstein, and Madden.
And what do you think about Steve Goodman and his song about the last request of a dying Cub fan when he said, bid adieu to the bleacher bums and send my ashes over Waveland Avenue?
He was a god. He when he wrote his songs, evidently he had an out-of-body experience looking down on the bleachers because he captured everything. His lyrics meant something. And to me, he's number one. His songs is timeless.
Jerry Pritikin, the bleacher preacher. Of course, like everybody else, celebrating Cubs culture this week as the Cubs come back to Wrigley Field for the World Series Game 3, 4, and 5. Jerry, thanks for coming in tonight and telling the story.
Next time I see you, we'll be flying a championship flag.
You know what, Rob Martier? The one thing that I didn't get in with Jerry Pritikin is that, you know what? He doesn't go to the park anymore because he can't afford it. That's something to think about. It's the old bleacher crew that, you know, I mean, I it's hard to shed a tear. I mean, for a long time, he just went to baseball games. But
right.
The idea that now, in 2016, a lot of those old-timers, they're not affording a $75 ticket every day to go see a series against the Reds in October, in August.
Did he say it jumped from, what, $5 to $6? Is that what it was?
Four to six. That's when he boycotted.
Yeah. even a $2 jump, you think $6, it's like, wow. I'd like to get a hot dog for that.
Now, Pete would know this, because I haven't been to the bleachers in a while, but, I mean, they now sell those as tickets. That's not, you can't just walk up to the, like the old days, and get in a line and get the tickets for the bleachers, right?
Right. I mean,
now it's just like every
just
other
like
seat.
Every other seat. Yeah.
That's too bad.
And when the Cubs go marching in, and when the Cubs go marching in, I wanna be in the bleachers when the Cubs go marching.
It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Walter Jacobson riding shotgun with me tonight. This is a surprise. We're talking Bat Boy, and he stuck around, and I love it. I can't think of a better co-host in the history of Chicago to have Walter Jacobson riding shotgun with you, right? I mean, that's
absolutely
pretty cool.
It's
pretty
a great pleasure for us to be here with Mr. Jacobson here. We're big fans from
thank you guys. Really.
Absolutely.
In studio with me tonight, two guys that we've been talking about Cubs culture all week here on The Download. Talk about jumping in and being immersing yourself in Cubs culture. Horatio Sanz, Joe Nunez, two L.A. actors who are in town. They had enough foresight to rent an apartment
in Wrigleyville.
In Wrigleyville, just for the experience. Not even necessarily with tickets to the game, just for the experience of soaking in Wrigleyville.
Yeah, Joe told me, you know, we had to act fast because, you know, the season hadn't ended yet.
Yeah, and it was a couple months, actually, a couple months ago. I said, man, we gotta look into living. I mean, I have family here. I could have stayed with my parents, but, you know, we needed to be close.
You can't do the kind of thing you want to do with your parents around, you know? it's a Cubs.
That's a good two-day visit, right? A two-day visit to the parents' house. You can't be doing a couple weeks.
What is it? Just an apartment in a building, a three or four flat?
It's a two flat, and it's a three-bedroom apartment, but we're five blocks away from Wrigley.
No, we're four.
Well, it depends on what kind of Google situation you have. Yeah.
How much you drank, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Joe's been drinking, so you know to him it's like three blocks.
What was what's the rent compared to what it might have been before all this happened?
That's the good news. By doing it actually a couple months ago, you know, it's not as bad as what is getting sort of jacked up right now.
I did a lot of research, Airbnb, which we didn't go with, but they wanted $7,000 to $8,000 for a two bedroom apartment, not as close to Wrigley.
Wow. For the same amount of time?
For 3 weeks. We're going to be here 3 weeks. we went all in.
This is all in.
3 weeks of our lives.
We didn't even know if the Cubs were going to, you know, make it past the Giants in the divisional series. We just had to just go all in.
Both of you guys are from Chicago originally, right?
Yes, sir.
We are.
Oh, so they're coming home.
Yeah.
That's the good news also is that we're here and with family and friends.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, you guys, Cubs fans in L.A., talk about the experience of being, you know, in L.A. for this. We'll talk about that. But first of all, you know, what makes you guys Cubs fans?
Childhood.
Childhood. And I have brothers that are 6 and 9 years older, so they would take me to the games when I was a wee lad, you know, Pulaski to Addison and then Addison all the way down. So, you know, this is something that we can't help. You know, we were indoctrinated as
born
children.
Born into brothels. Born into Cubs brothels, so to speak.
Yeah, so we were born into it, and we never wavered. You know, there was a few bad years that I didn't pay attention as much, but for the most part, you know, every day just watching and hoping.
I was a latchkey kid, so I watched sorry, Mom and Dad.
Father was Jack Brickhouse in more ways than one.
Yeah, growing up. And Harry. And I mean, my God, and you know the Cubs teams of the 70s and 80s all throughout. I was lucky. I lived at Addison near Addison and Western, and I could ride my bike to Wrigley, and if I had $5, I could go see a game by myself if I had to, buy myself you know a hot dog and a drink and a hat for like $5 or $6,
right.
And I'd sit in the bleachers because what was it, $2.75?
We joke about how the bleachers get cheaper and cheaper every time you tell the story, and you're like, eventually you're like, the bleachers were 55 cents. I remember
the bleachers were a nickel when I was in eighth grade,
but it wasn't that far off. It was like $2 for the bleachers at the time.
That's like
about 100,000 times that for these seats.
When my dad tells the story, he grew up at Lakewood and Addison, right there. I mean, just like, but the same thing. I mean, it's always like from parking cars for the 63 championship to, yeah, they just let me in. I was just free. In my day, it was just free. I'm like, all right.
There were times, though, like when it was like maybe fifth inning or something.
Yeah, they would just open the gates.
The gates were open, and you walked in. You just had to wait.
So, I mean, for you guys, what are some of the memories? I mean, what do you associate when you think of the high sort of memories of being a Cubs fan? I mean, is it the 84 squad? Well, for you guys, what is it that, you know, is the shining moment for your Cubdom?
Probably when the Cubs in 84 got into the playoffs, because at that point we hadn't seen them in the playoffs ever. I don't know if they were in the playoffs before that since 45.
The divisional, right? They clinched the division.
No, I mean, I don't think that you're right. I think that 69 was the closest they ever came, and they should have, and we talked to a couple guys this week about it. But, 84 was the first divisional, like, playoff appearance.
That was the first time where I was reading the newspaper every day, like, just covering what was going on with the Cubs, just reading the the paper the next day and like, ooh, knowing about it. And Stuart Sutcliffe and those guys.
Rick.
But, you know, Stuart Sutcliffe of the Beatles was very influential.
The original Beatles
drummer. Manager of the Beatles.
Around that era, that Cubs era, that's when I started learning the names, you know, Ryan Sandberg, Ron Say, Stuart Sutcliffe of the, you know,
the Beatles.
Rick Sutcliffe.
Were you buddies way back then when you were?
Yeah, we were buddies from Second City. We went to Second City.
Not as kids. Somewhat grown up, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Not as kids.
Yeah. But funny, we had a lot of similar quirks, love of the Cubs, of course.
And what was the idea? How did you get the idea to do what you did? What did you do one day decide? Were you just going to rent an apartment?
Yeah, I mean, anywhere close. We just wanted to be in the area because we figured, you know, we wanted the atmosphere of it. So win or lose, at least, you know, we'd try. Of course, we didn't want to be in Wrigleyville if they lost. Luckily, things have turned out good so far.
Oh, my God, so amazing.
So we're right in the middle of it, and it's great. But, yeah, just the idea that this hasn't happened in my life. It hasn't happened in my father's life. It hasn't happened in Joe's life, and he's been around a long time.
Much longer than
yourself. So it's like, let's seize the opportunity and go all in, so to speak.
My argument was, you know what, let's do this. Let's go all in. If the Cubs don't make it, you know, yeah, we'll lick our wounds, but we'll go to Blackhawks games. We'll go to Bulls games.
Yeah, right.
We'll visit our family.
Yeah, we'll get our family in there somewhere.
It's on the list somewhere.
Yeah, both of our families are here. So.
Joe Nunez, Horatio Sands in studio tonight. Two L.A. actors who spent time here in Chicago, Second City. Horatio on Saturday Night Live. Joe Nunez in tons of movies. I mean, we're just saying Superbad.
Sure. 40 Over It.
Yep, exactly. So
all of those.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us.
Baseball season's underway. Better get ready for a brand new day. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? Cubs are gonna win today. They're singing, go, Cubs, go. Go, Cubs, go.
We hear a lot of that song this week. 720 WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman. The Download. Walter Jacobson in with me tonight. Also, Joe Nunez, Horatio Sands in studio to talk about their trip from L.A. to rent a Wrigleyville apartment.
Describe what we're wearing.
You're wearing you're very Blues Brothers with your you have leather jackets on. Explain it.
Cubs hats and leather jackets and I don't know.
Another jeans. Part of why we love to come back is to go thrifting, and I found this one on Milwaukee Avenue for, I think, $30.
I got this at Strange Cargo for $20.
There you go.
Yeah. And it stinks.
I don't buy new leather. Only used stinky leather from.
It's recycled.
There you go. So you got, if you come back to Chicago, you gotta get the stinky leather
support
too, right?
I do want to also at some point sing our version of Go Cubs Go. I've added a few lines to it, but nothing. It's very clean.
Okay.
You know how I do, because I don't like that song. Let me just admit this now.
Oh, no.
I love it. All right. Bring it on.
It's not my favorite song.
Steve Goodman.
I rather.
Bro.
I rather.
This is where I walk out.
Hey, hey, holy mackerel. That's what I'm old school.
Okay.
But, you know, Go Cubs Go, everybody's happy. And, of course, I'm going to sing along, but it's not my favorite song.
So you changed the lyrics?
Well, I have a verse. So we go. Go ahead. Ready?
Go ahead.
Go Cubs Go.
Go Cubs Go.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are going to win it. Then you go, go, Cubs, go. In the morning.
Go, Cubs, go.
In supper time. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are going to win today.
Why didn't we work this bit out before?
I don't know. All you had to do is just sing the song you've always sung 1,000 times.
Well, but I think it worked. It was good.
So we've added in the morning and supper time.
In the morning.
The supper time is really ties it together, because, you know, that's a big, important meal, supper time. So
that bombed.
All right. So, no, it did not. It did not. I guarantee you everybody loved it.
Yeah.
All right. So you guys, of course, in Los Angeles, there is such a huge Chicago contingency. I mean, there are so many people out there working in Hollywood.
Almost obnoxiously
so. But there's something about it. And there is it's so amazing. And it's great to see on Instagram and Facebook and other places where people get together when there are big events, whether it be a Cubs game or a Blackhawks game or Bulls game. Yeah. And you guys, I mean, Joe, you're kind of the ringleader. You're the guy that like sort of sets it up and all these Chicagoans come out.
I definitely. Well, you know, you feel homesick when you're out, you know, so far away. And I felt that was the best way to get people from every generation, you know, old school Second City guys, to people that just moved out there. and everyone in between, people that aren't even in the industry, but they find out, oh my God, there's this bar downtown Los Angeles where all these Chicago people go. So yeah, for about, you know, we started, definitely started with the, you know, the Blackhawks dynasty, where we'd get people together and people would come out and more would show up. I've always done that. Like if there's a, you know, if the Bulls are in town, I would get people together and I would like buy a suite out, but I'd, you know, try to get a deal on it. If we can get 40 people in the suite, the guys at Staples Center would give us, you know, give us a deal.
That's great.
So,
and he would pocket 10%. No one knew. And
we'd all have a good time. That's a Chicago way, right?
Yeah, it's a Chicago.
Hustling all the time, man.
It's a tip for what it's worth.
As long as my ticket was paid for. Made everyone buy me a beer.
So he's, I call him Chicago Joe because he so loves Chicago. And
I love getting people together, and that's something that's, you know, that's something that bonds us.
And it's really, I mean, a lot of people may not know this, but it's really hard to do in LA. There are a lot of Chicagoans go out there, and then you're like, oh my God, we're all out here, we're gonna have a great time. Walter's here, yeah, that's gonna be great. And then you're like, yeah, but you got to drive, and I live 40 minutes this way and that way. And then
to go downtown,
It's very different than in Chicago. So the ability to get people out around the Cubs, around Chicago sports, I mean, that's difficult to do, and you do it.
It's a great excuse to be social with our friends too, like
and drink like we're still in Chicago.
Yeah, and this isn't a plug, but it is a plug. The bar is called Escondite.
The Escondite,
we don't own any of it, unfortunately,
yet.
But
I get 10%.
But we, that's where we have all our. That's a headquarters.
You gotta
Chicago
buy Joe. You gotta buy Joe a beer.
You gotta buy me a couple beers.
And he runs around with there's a horn there for Hawks games. Joe runs around with. They have a defibrillator.
Oh, for Bears games. I mean, we go all out. We, you know, we dress the part.
All right, so let's get back to this weekend. So you guys are you guys going to the games this weekend?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going.
Oh, yes.
We're going Sunday for sure, and we'll see what comes up in the next couple days.
So what is a week? So tell us a little bit about what a night is like in Wrigleyville for you guys. I mean, are you guys going to the bars? Are you trying to get in these different places? We've heard about these crazy charges. Like what's happening around the crash pad that is Joe and Horatio are crashing for 3 weeks in Chicago?
Well, you know, we stock up the fridge. We have friends over, or we'll, you know, if we lose, we'll go watch the next game with family, reset. It's not a real party pad.
I love that it's happening, but I don't want to be in the middle of it. Like, I don't necessarily want to be at Murphy's Bleachers or, you know.
Right.
You know, we have gone to Harry Carey's, though, to watch games, which I think is amazing, which is not in Wrigleyville.
Yeah,
they don't charge
you
$100 to go to Harry Carey's.
Yeah. You know, I think it's hard to watch, I think, baseball in a bar. Harder than watching football, say, or basketball, say, because a baseball game can take 4 hours. Yeah. It's a relatively slow sport, right?
Yeah. You have to be very patient. But since this is such an important series, the World Series, kind of just you're on the edge of your seat if you're a Cub fan.
We're hyper-focused. We're hyper-focused. We don't want to miss, you know. Luckily, we've gone to, a few games, and we don't want to, you know, get too crazy and, like, miss out on the memory.
Right.
Like we would have done.
You guys are adults now. Yeah. You know, this is not.
This happened in 2003, perhaps. We wouldn't remember what happened a couple days ago.
If you were asked by a friend who has lived neither in L.A. or Chicago where to move between the two cities, where's a better place to live?
Jacobson getting hardcore.
Start out in Chicago.
And then go to L.A.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you want to be an actor.
Oh, well, that I understand.
Okay, yeah.
What if you just...
As far as quality
about
of
living?
Life?
Yeah.
I like L.A. because I can drive to a grocery store in my car, as opposed to New York. But Chicago's kind of the blend of both.
Well,
there is neighborhoods, and you can kind of sprawl out and walk around.
I like Chicago because of all the food, unfortunately. And fortunately for me...
I say Chicago because we're on the radio here.
Okay. You're on WGN in Chicago, right?
Yeah. Fortunately for me, the food isn't out there in L.A. Otherwise, I'd be 500 pounds diabetic, and you'd have to cut me out of my parents' basement.
I'm surprised to hear you say drive to a drugstore. I figured that everybody who got in a car in L.A. and sat in the car for... 3 hours.
Hey.
Well, luckily we're also actors that don't work all the time, so we could avoid rush hour. We could avoid rush hour and busy times.
Wait, you work all the time. I watch you.
You know, in short segments we work, but that's
Feast of famine.
The traffic here has gotten crazy, which means I guess there's just more people here, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
All right, let me ask you. You guys are going to be at Harry Carey's tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning at 5
a.m. Crack of dawn for the WGN-TV pep rally for the World Series.
Yeah.
That's something you did earlier, I think, for the NLCS as well. I mean, you guys have been – I've seen you guys at Harry Carey on TV, on social media.
Did you see us at all on television? They were interviewing Joel Murray, and I tried to choke Joe behind behind it, like with the rally towel.
That wasn't another network, but we were behind Joel as he was being – interviewed, and I'm like just standing there watching Joel, and then Horatio takes his t-shirt and like chokes me, and I'm like, we were like 12-year-old kids behind the news reporter, like trying to
That was the day we tied the series.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Maybe that was a good luck charm. You got to do it tomorrow.
Yeah. You know? Choke Joel.
Tremendous! What a charm Chicago life you guys live in. Oh, I mean, boy. How great that you go to Harry Carey's. You get to go to the games this weekend. Joe Nunez, Horatio Sanz, thanks so much for coming down, guys. And go Cubs, and have a great weekend. And the rest of the stay here in Chicago. In
oh,
Wrigley
my gosh.
Bill.
We will. Well, thanks,
Let's do
guys.
It this weekend.
You're the best.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. Got to thank Walter Jacobson for sticking around tonight. I know it's a late night for you, and I appreciate you sticking around and playing co-host shotgun with me. Good talking.
I appreciate you asking me, and I'm going to thank you for letting me be here. Those guys were really great. One of the drawbacks, few drawbacks, but one of the drawbacks to radio compared to television is that you can hear them, and they're wonderful, but you can't see them.
They're
and
good
the
too.
Clothes they, you they, describe and the expressions on their faces.
They got a good look too,
they're
yeah.
They're just great, really.
They really do. Well, I mean, they're trained actors. They're comedians, and so you're right. I mean, their expressions and everything sort of
I have to tell you, one of the great things about your show is that you get so many different people in so many different parts of our culture, and then you let them talk, and that's really good, rather than this 20-second stuff, you know?
Well, I can't thank you enough for sticking around, man. Okay. Dream come true to have Walter Jacobson co-host and download. Thanks for being here, bud.
Fans all over the world, Cub fans, this is next year, it's here. Fans all over the world, come on. Cubs fans, this is next year, it's here.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, we've been World Series week here on the Download. We've been talking to celebrities, fans, former players all week long. And tonight we continue that thread, of course, with one of our – it's very interesting. Ike Barinholtz was one of the first guests on this program, the star of the Mindy Project and movies like Suicide Squad, Sisters, The Neighbors 1 and 2. Ike Barinholtz, a lifelong diehard Cubs fan. He actually Instagrammed out last night. He was sitting in a in a sushi – was a sushi restaurant in a New York airport? I mean, you're really going deep at that point, right?
Yeah, Terminal 5. I'm not popular at Terminal 5 at JFK.
Ike, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, brother. How are you, man?
I'm good. So let's talk about this. I mean, for you, this is you've been through it through your entire life. You've been a Cubs fan, and it's been a lot of futility. Talk about what it means for the team to be in the World Series.
I mean, it's this is the biggest thing to happen to Chicago since. I mean, the biggest thing up to this point was probably when Geraldo Rivera was going into Al Capone's vaults, that special. But, I mean, so it's on that level.
That's right.
No, man, it's huge. I grew up on the north side. I grew up in Wrigleyville, actually. And, you know, I have very strong memories of 84, of, you know, that great 84 team with Jody Davis and Ron Say. I used to be – I still can't name every single player, even, like, you know, the deep bench players on that 84 team. And I really used to impress – when I was single, I really used to use that trivia to impress girls. Yeah. They loved to know.
They loved it,
right? You know what gets girls crazy is when you say – hey, one of the backup pitchers was Rich Bordy.
you guys, Gary Woods fans?
Let me tell you about a guy named Tom Verizer.
Well, you know, for you, I mean, talk about those memories. I mean, obviously, baseball's a family experience. Your family's a diehard Cubs, and you grew up in Wrigleyville. I mean, this is not just about baseball. This is about sort of connecting the fact that the Barinholtz have been through it all when it comes to the Cubs.
Yeah, man, we really were, you know. We remember, you know. I went to school. I went to Onchamet, which is right on Pine Grove and Grace.
Right.
So there's a Pancake House. I don't know if it's still there. The Pancake House, the IHOP, right over there, right
That's
by
a good
where
question.
Broadway.
Yeah.
If any fans are driving in that neighborhood right now and they see that IHOP there, give Justin a call or honk your horn.
Honk your horn, right?
But no, we'd go in there and like we would see, you know, all the Cubs there. I'll never forget. I was there with my mom one time and. one of her friends. They're having coffee, this nice older Jewish lady. And she sees Shalon Dunstan sitting in there with, like, his girlfriend or something. And she goes, "Oh, Andre, over here." And I was like, "Oh, no, don't do that.
No,
you mustn't
no.
do that. You mustn't do that." But, yeah, and then, I mean, of course, I remember in 89. And then I, when I started, you know, really getting into the improv scene in the mid to late 90s, I lived, I don't know if you remember, Justin, but I lived four doors west of Wrigley Field. I lived, there was the McDonald's right across the street.
Of course,
and there
yeah.
was, like, that kind of sweet old crazy religious lady that had all the, like, the prayer cards that all the Cubs fans would get drunk and urinate all over. And I was two doors down from her. And that was also, that happened to be like 98 and 99 when the team was good, but also you had Sammy Sosa and McGuire chasing each other. So I would come home. I was working at the CTA. I'd come home, take the red line home. And then you would walk around Sheffield and you would see just thousands of people standing in the streets wearing baseball gloves, waiting to catch a ball. It was just, it was the craziest, craziest sensation.
For you, we're talking with Ike Barinholtz here on The Download. For you, I mean, you growing up in Wrigleyville, being a part of that, the fabric of that neighborhood, you know, also going back and being in the improv scene, you've seen Wrigleyville change. I mean, it was at one point a neighborhood that had Cubs games, and then it became just this juggernaut of party around around baseball. But you've
yeah.
seen both ways Wrigleyville's gone.
Yeah, I have you know, memories when I was young of it just being like a lot of like small tailors and like gay comic book shops and stuff, you know. And now, yeah, it. And then I really watched the what I would call the fraternization or
yeah.
the broing of the neighborhood. Which I listen, I myself am part bro, and so
proud part bro.
You know, yeah, but you know, I do miss the. I haven't been there in a little while, but I do miss the IO being there. I mean, you know, the new theater is incredible. I you know I have such good memories of going to that Salt and Pepper Diner after you know you do a show at IO, and I've just seen it go from yeah. I've watched it grow.
You've watched it grow. You know, for you being now on the West Coast and like I said, even New York, or just being in the Hollywood system where you're obviously away from Chicago. Talk about the camaraderie about Cubs fans in your business. We talked to Bob Newhart earlier this week. Joe Mantegna yep. was on the program. Just about yep. the idea that there is this sort of traveling, almost nomadic Cubs fan that goes from play. It's past space.
There really is, man. It's so present when you go to a Cubs-Dodgers game. I've been lucky enough to go into that suite with the Ricketts and stuff, with all the you know actors that are there, and it's like, you know, Jeff Garland and Bob Newhart and William Peterson and Jeremy Piven, and I turned to I think Bob Odenkirk last time. There's enough Chicago actors in this booth to lock down financing for a $2 million independent film. And because it's all just like fun dudes and everyone has the same, I don't know. There's just such a bond you have as a Cubs fan, especially when you are so far removed mm-hmm. from Chicago, that we've been through it all together. And you find that so many of those seminal moments in Cubs history, those people were there. Like, I think everyone in that booth, I feel like, I don't know about Bob Newhart, but I was at the Bartman game. I know Jeff Garland was at the Bartman game. I know Brad Morris was at the Bartman game. So there is just this bond
right.
That we all have. And it's bigger than showbiz. And Justin, as you know, I think almost nothing is bigger than showbiz.
That's right. That's been your mantra. You're a mantra guy.
Mantra.
You say that before every
Got the
shoot.
Tattoo.
Right.
Got the tattoo.
That's right. You know, for you, I mean, what is it about being a Cubs fan? I mean, there's always this concept of, and others have been on the program this week talking about hope or the concept of, I think it was Bob Newhart's routine where he says, you know, life is like being a Cubs fan. When it's going great, you know you're going to blow it. Like, there's just something about the futility, about hope. What is it about when you think a little bit more philosophical about being a Cubs fan that draws you to it?
You know, I think the key word there is hope. You know what it is? I don't think anyone's ever said this phrase before, but it's about the audacity of hope. I think
right.
I'm going to start. You know what? Actually, if you could credit me for saying
that's a
that,
new
right
mantra.
It's kind
right.
of a
right.
new mantra. Yeah, but no, it really is hope, isn't it? Because first of all, there's really never been like even like a Buffalo Bills style Cubs team, like a early 90s Bills, where they were so great for, you know, 4 or 5 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And we would have fluky Cubs teams. Like we had 84, 89, 98, 03. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so,
right.
So it's so kind of sparse. And we get so excited about it. But I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's the thought that next year has to be better than the last year, because usually that year wasn't great.
Right.
And you know, we just want to come back for more.
All right, so this weekend, Wrigleyville is going to be hopping, of course, as the Cubs come back for 3, 4, and 5. For you, what's it mean to come back to Chicago? I mean, talk about the experience of coming to Chicago to witness and be a part of a World Series here at Addison and Clark.
I should be clear, I'm coming to town just to sell merch. And it's not Cubs merch. It's like show business related merchandise.
Right.
Like I have like DVDs of Neighbors. I have like Mindy Project hats. I'm actually going to be pretty far west. I'm going to be almost by Kedzie, on the corner of Kedzie. I don't even know where yet. No, I'm excited, man. I'm flying in tomorrow with my wife. I'm like, you know, it's going to be this thing I've been waiting for. And my wife, for the record, is a pretty diehard White Sox fan.
Wow.
And for years it's been not contentious, but not contentious. but she's been watching me very closely as I, you know, have been following this. You know, Theo, I'll call them the Theos, and she's gotten really, really wrapped up into it. She's so excited. And then I'm going to go with her on Saturday, and I'm going to take my dad on Sunday. The last time my dad and I were at a Cubs game together was game 7 of the 03 NLCS, where Kerry Wood hit that home run. I remember I was so happy that moment. I picked up my father, and I was bouncing him like a baby. Like, I was so crazy, but I'm so excited to see, you know, win or lose, just to be there and be able to say I saw the Cubs in the World Series. You know what I mean? Not that many people are able to say that.
Ike Barinholtz, the Hollywood star and merchandise.
Thanks, man.
And Hollywood merchandise, the merchant, the Kedzie merchant, Ike Barinholtz.
It's also not just merchandising for my particular stuff. I also sell Big Bang Theory shirts.
Just, whatever you can get your hands on, right?
Blackish. I have Blackish pens.
You should share the corner. Share the corner at Kedzie with the guy who sells the huge rugs right out of the van, the Tiger and the Tupac. Yeah.
Yes.
You can get a little of that action. That'd be good. Ike Barinholtz.
Because I also sell Tiger rugs, too.
There you go. So it works out. It's perfect. Ike Barinholtz is coming back to Chicago. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out tonight. We appreciate it.
Brother, go Cubs, and I will. I'll see you soon, my friend.
Celebrating Cubs culture, World Series week here on the Download. We're off tomorrow night in Blackhawks for Game 3, so we won't be on for Game 3, 4, and 5. So we kind of shove it all in tonight, which is good. I mean, come on, it's World Series week.
Ike Barinholtz. It was great.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Hilarious.
Ike and I did, it's funny, Ike was a founding member of the sketch group, Schadenfreude, and Ike also was, we did Second City classes together when we were like kids. And we've stayed in touch all these years. He's true. It's funny, like, that he talks about where he lived in Wrigleyville. He lived in a lot of, he was the kind of guy who had an apartment that was like above Ty Still 4.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the kind of guy that you're like, this is where you live? All right. No, but he's a true blue Chicagoan. And one of these days when he's in town, we'll get him in here and we'll talk about his time where he worked at the CTA. He's got funny stories about being an employee of the Chicago Transit Authority. But coming up, I'm very excited about this. This is good. You know, you've heard all of these stories all week long about the dreaded cover charge and these packages and all the money and people and everything involved with Wrigleyville bars, right? So right off the bat, I'm like, well, we got to talk to somebody about, you know, someone who really understands that culture. And I remember that, you know, we've had her on a couple of times. Colleen Henneman, who's also known as the drunk Cubs fan. I reached out to her and she said she's already in line.
Oh.
Yeah, she's in line for one of the bars on Clark Street, so we're going to talk to her.
Get a head start. Nice.
She's got to get a head start, because this is really kind of her, this is the Super Bowl for World Series. So Colleen Henneman coming up here after the news. I'm so excited to talk to her. We'll get an update. She's on Clark Street, so we'll get an update on where she's at as she gets ready to sort of claim her territory for the weekend. This is it. This is Mardi Gras for Colleen, the drunk Cubs fan. So she's coming up right here after the news. I love that remix, Chance the Rapper and Go Cubs Go. The White Sox fan, who was actually paid by the White Sox. He's like a White Sox ambassador, isn't he? I think he's like on the payroll, or at least they make hats for him. And he's the big remix for Go Cubs Go. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Well, we were talking right before the news, the idea that tomorrow in Wrigleyville is not just about the game. Of course, everybody is really excited about that, but it's also about the party. Clark Street's going to be jumping. We've seen all day long these stories of cover charges and food packages and hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to get in. People standing in line for hours to be able to, I guess, sample the culture that is Clark Street in Wrigleyville. One woman we've had on the program before, she has she really should be the unofficial historian, if not the unofficial tour guide for Wrigleyville, Colleen Henneman. She is also known as Drunk Cubs Fan, and she is in Wrigleyville as we speak, getting ready for the big, big game tomorrow, because you know what? The truth is, you got to start standing in line now. Colleen Henneman, welcome to the download.
Oh, my God. What is up? This is the year. We're going to do it. But this is happening. How are you, Jason? Woo! Go Cubs! Was that version of Go Cubs Go 3 times faster, or am I really, really drunk?
No, it was a remix. It's So you're standing in line.
Okay,
what bar are you standing in line for?
No, man, I don't stand in line. There's no standing. I'm not going to stand in line with people from Mundelein or Barrington or Gary. Coming over the border, hashtag build a wall. I've been here. I blacked off work 4.5 weeks ago. I have not been to work, and I've just been here in the area. Right now, I'm in sort of an alley, or it's like where they like throw the grease trap. I'm behind Rocket on Clark, and I Shawshank this, man. I can go from here right into the back of Yaxies and then cross back over. I'll zigzag. I'm not paying any cover charge. If your license says any, like 606 anything, you know, I'm not, no. And tell the alderman, you know, what is the face value of waiting in line at Yaxies? What is the face value of waiting in line at Deuces? I was, you know, like, I get it. They're all yelling at their big chairs because they thought they were going to get it. So I'm here, and yeah. I think I got fired because I haven't been to work. I've missed, I think my phone says, what does it say, 213 missed calls from California Tan. But I'm just going to call them back in November, and they're going to understand. Nobody needs a tan right now.
Right.
Nobody needs a tan right now. People aren't tuning in to Fox to see Chicago Cubs fans with tans.
Right, right. Now, I think you're okay. I think California Tan will let you back in once this is over. They have to understand. They know you. Okay, so, I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, the Cubs have not won for so many years, 71 years. Talk a little bit about what you know about the Cubs culture, the Cubs history from your time on Clark Street in Wrigleyville.
Well, I know a ton because this other night I was at Irish Oak and I met this guy who was there, and he said he was a historian, and he was like telling me all this stuff about when last time they were doing this, you know, and it was like 1908, and there's like is amazing how much has changed. There's like so much that has changed. Like the last time Cubs were in World Series, like baseball teams were like allowed to have super racist mascot names. Like that was just a thing. Like you could just like have a really racist right. name for a team. And like last time Cubs were in World Series, like most of the people at Wrigley Field were white Chicagoans. You know, it was like predominantly Caucasian fans.
Right.
And
right.
Last time Cubs were in World Series, like city didn't really care that much about reaching the public transportation for everyone. So like the public transportation stopped at 95th, even though like Southside keeps going for a lot more numbers. And right. like it's all this stuff. Like last time it was like Teddy Roosevelt was president. And then later his cousin or something, or his brother-in-law became president after FDR. And like now, like you never vote in a president that was like related. Like what is right. this, a monarchy? You know what I mean? Like right. so much has changed.
So
it's
much.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Well, I mean, a lot of people are getting emotional this week. I mean, obviously you're in Wrigleyville.
God.
What's it like to think about?
I mean, just hearing you say the word emotional makes me like get emotional, because this is like something that I talked about this with people in bars for like my whole, since I was like 17 and going to bars, and like now it's happening. This is our year. And I think about all the people that aren't here to see this, like my grandma and my papa and that McDonald's across the street from Wrigley. Like that McDonald's, that poor McDonald's, like it was here forever.
Right.
And like, and now it's not here. And like, that just seems really unfair. And that was my McDonald's. Like that was the McDonald's I would stumble to after I woke up under Don Zimmer. Like there's nothing better than watching a Chicago sunrise under the shadow of Don Zimmer. And you're just like, it's time for a McGriddle. You know, I'm going to clasp my bra back on and like go across the street and get like, you know, God, just think of it, Jason, like that is not there. And now it could be all day breakfast.
Right. Colleen Henneman, my guest tonight, she's already in Wrigleyville. She's been there for 4.5 weeks, just sort of living off the land, living off the bars.
Yeah.
Let's continue. I'm interested, you know, for you. And I mean, this is such an important time, but it's also this team. This team is great. I know we've talked before, Colleen, as different teams, different places, but this team, there's something about this team that you really
this
love.
Team. Oh my God. Well, first of all, it's like a boy band. It's like a boy band of sports teams. Like there's something for something for everybody. And like, I mean, let's start with Schwarber, because that guy can pinch hit me up any time. And like I love it, because like doctors are like, it's too dangerous for you to stand still, but we'll make you like, you know, crush one into the, do you see that one where he like hit the ball and it like went in the scoreboard?
Mm-hmm.
And,
the home run, right?
And they were like, leave the ball there. You know, everybody was like chanting next day when they found it.
Right.
It's like, I would have him, his ball on my scoreboard anytime. And that's like a euphemism for sex.
All right.
Like,
right.
But I have an idea, because this dude, he's so like, do you see the videos of his swing choir?
Right. Yes. We talked about this
videos.
The purple pizzazz. Right.
Yeah, man, this guy can do it all. And so I have an idea, because season's going to end soon and we're going to be victorious. And I say he rides that fame. And Schwarber, if you're listening, here's my idea. Here's my proposition. You and I, we start a falafel place next to Nuts on Clark. We call it Schwarber Shawarma. And you go in there and you get some grilled meats.
Right.
Because that rolls off the tongue.
It really does. There's a lot of alliteration.
And then it
will
be like,
right.
Yeah, meat so good. Meat so good, you won't mind it when you find a little bit in your soul patch tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean?
What about the Cleveland Indians? I mean, for you, I as a diehard fan of baseball, and I know you watch the games religiously, what do you think of the Cleveland Indians?
Well, first of all, I just have one comment, and I don't think it's fair. I don't understand how Carlos Santana is allowed to do two jobs. You either are a musician or you play for a baseball team and go World Series. Like, I just feel like Carlos Santana should just, like, stick with doing duets with Rob Zombie. And like, just, right. I don't get it. I don't think there should be a crossover. Right. I mean, is that guy related to Joan Baez? Because that might be a little bit different.
Javi Baez. And Joan Baez? I don't think they're related. I'd have to look that up.
Okay.
Pete's looking it up right now.
Yeah.
They're not.
Tell Pete to text me once he knows. But anyway, I think, like, that's sneaky of Indians to have, like, oh, we're also going to have famous musicians play, too. So, like, no. That's a no.
Well, Colleen, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
No, I don't want to cut you off.
What? Oh, God, you can't. I mean, I just, like, go all night. You know, my flavor of the month is Ross.
Oh, yeah, David Ross, the catcher, right?
Give me Ross all he is so hot. And you know what's so hot about him is he literally could be the great-grandfather of Ash Russell. Like, he literally could be. I mean, and he's still, like, 2 years younger than me. But that's, like, it's awesome right there that he's, like, you know, old man Ross, and he's just, you know what he looks like? He looks like that guy that's married to Overboard.
Overboard.
You know the Overboard? You know that movie where their lady gets conked on the head?
Oh, Goldie Hawn.
Goldie Hawn. He looks like
Kurt Russell.
Goldie Hawn's. Yeah. We might want to fact check that. Have Pete fact check that too.
I'll check if David Ross is Kurt Russell.
He looks like Overboard.
Okay.
Overboard's husband.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things happening this weekend. You know, you have a lot of things on it. Are you going to any of the games?
Oh, man. No, I don't have tickets. But I'm holding out. Like, what I'm doing right now is laying the groundwork. It's kind of like, if not very different than campaigning. You know what I mean? Like, I got to pay attention to the swing states. And for me, that's like deuces. That's like Red Ivy, Sluggers, you know what I mean? Because that has like a lot of crossover fan base. The closer you get to the field, the more likely you are to stumble into somebody who's like, you look nice, and we French kissed in line for the bathroom. Do you want my extra ticket?
Right.
Because I totally was going to go with Tom Tunney, and then all hell broke loose. And
Coco, he can't get the, right, all these dudes fail, right?
And I'm like, if you're my alderman, you know what I mean? If they don't have a right, like, what right do I have?
Right.
So, yeah, so I'm just going to, like, my plan is, like, I'm not paying any covers either. So once I get to the bar that I want to be at for, like, majority of tomorrow, I'm just going to, like, I have 7 coats with me. So I'm just going to, like, spread my coats around a big table and, like, order some poppers and then just, like, and get, like just pound ice water. And then, you know, by the time people start rolling in, I'll be like, all 7 of my friends are in the bathroom.
Right. That's a strong game plan. You know all the bars. I mean, it's interesting. What's your favorite Wrigleyville bar?
Oh man, that's like asking that lady with all those children on that TLC show to pick her favorite child. You know what I mean? How's she gonna do that? A, because they all pretty much have the same name. They all start the same letter. But B, it's like they're all her kids.
Right.
So for me, there's like special memories in every single one of those bars.
Right. Right.
Like, you know, and it's Cubs and beyond. Like, my mind is going to explode because this is my plan. We roll right through World Series. We go Halloween, then finishing out the series, and then I'm just rolling right into T-Box like, I'm never leaving Wrigley. But, so, like, this is, like, it's unbelievable. But for me, I got to say, if you pressed me on the issue and you held my feet to the fire, I'd have to say, Mullins, because it's got a golden tee, which was my first.
The first golden tee you've ever played?
No, the first one I had sex on.
Right, there it is. Colleen Henneman, drunk Cubs fan, I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. I know that you have business to take care of to secure your spot at whatever bar you choose to go to this weekend. Be responsible, but at the same time, go Cubs. Right, Colleen?
I mean, go Cubs. Go Cubs, go. Boom, boom. Go Cubs, go.
Right.
Hey, Chicago, what do you... You know, thank God the thing doesn't have a lot more verses. It's just, like, tight and right. It's, like, all we can handle after 100 years. It's, right. Like, keep it simple. You know what I mean?
Right. Colleen Henneman, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me, too. I had a blast, and I will see you around. If you see me, just come up to me and give me a hug, because we're doing... This is going to be it, you guys. And then I don't know, but, like, this is for me is, like, it's just a thing for, hold on, I gotta go.
All right.
My popper's already.
All right. Colleen, thank you so much for joining us. Colleen Henneman. Oh, what a great time.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way. 108, we don't want to wait. We just want to play, set the summer straight. About to win 100 games. Jay Hay, about to make a play. Let's get the K, we feeling fresh today. Got the dub yesterday. New team with the World Series attitude. Road to the ship, that's the World Series avenue. Feeling like the baddest dude.
That's great, man. It's a download here on 720 WGN. All the way up. Chicago Bulls win tonight. All right. Also, can I just say, for everybody who's texting in and calling in, Colleen Henneman, I hate to do this. The comic in me hates to do it, but she's not real. It's a character that Kate James does. We've done it on the show before. Kate James, who's in Los Angeles, does. And you have to look up Drunk Cubs Fan on YouTube, and you will see Kate do probably the most hilarious. She did... the character in front of Wrigley Field for an opening day about 5 years ago. And the story goes that she did it, and it just got picked up. Like, it was viral in a day. It was on ESPN. It was on Sports Illustrated. Everybody was like, look at this drunk Cubs fan. Like, that was the idea of kind of. And over time, she's recognized on the street all the time. People are like, oh, my God, it's Colleen Henneman. She has had to fend off this sort of viral sensation. She's written pieces about it, this idea of almost going viral in the sports world. And it's all fake. It's just fake. It's a funny bit she does, and she's very, very good at it. And as you can tell, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people get confused or are tricked by it is because she is so good. She's so good. So good. Colleen Henneman on the download. You can't do the World Series week in Chicago talking about Wrigleyville and cover charges without Colleen Henneman, right? I mean, come on. All right. All right, coming up with us more, we'll go back to the real, the world of the real. Coming up, Liz Garibay and Bill Savage. We're going to talk about the history of Clark Street and the taverns and everything involved with that. I'm so excited to talk about this. We were talking about this earlier in the week, Pete, just about this hasn't always been this sort of corporate double-decker, cover charge type experience in Wrigleyville. There's a lot of great taverns that have gone by the wayside. Some gyms that are still there. So we'll talk with them about that coming up here on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. I'm really excited about our next segment. We've been talking about Wrigleyville and Clark Street as we continue to celebrate Cubs culture, talk about World Series. It's World Series week here in the download. And, we thought about it because there's been so many stories in the news about cover charges and, how much money it's going to take to watch a baseball game in Wrigleyville. And it got us thinking about just Wrigleyville and how that area is really sort of, it's changed over the years. It hasn't always been sort of a corporate sports bar area. As a matter of fact, we've had guests on the program. We've talked about it from bands like Naked Ray Gun or Urge Overkill talking about a different, Joe Shanahan from Metro mm-hmm. talking about a different Wrigleyville than even what it was 10, 15 years ago. So I thought we'd bring in some people to talk about this. Bill Savage, good to see you. I'd love
good to
Bill's,
be back.
Good to see you. He teaches literature at Northwestern at the Newberry Library as well, and he has written the intro and the notes for George Ade's The Old Time Saloon. It's a new book, which is out right now.
Just out from U of Chicago Press. Get one.
There it is. And Liz Garibay. Liz is a beer and bar historian who's working on the new Chicago Brewseum, which I think is a great idea and should be done by now. I'm surprised it hasn't been done. Liz, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with you, Liz? I mean, it's very interesting that, you know, Wrigleyville is not always been called that. I mean, it really is Lakeview, and people right. in Chicago know that. And Lakeview wasn't necessarily a neighborhood. It was really started as almost like a suburban development.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about Chicago history and what Chicago originally was, our boundaries in a sense, I think people hopefully know that we were established in 1837. 1871 people I think are familiar with as well, right? The Great Chicago Fire. And at that point, our just to give you some context, our northern boundary was North Avenue, Fullerton during the fire. So we're talking about the Lakeview area, which is basically like a northern suburb. At mm-hmm. you know, 1850s, 1870s. And so it was really established. Of course, Native Americans were there and had some settlements. And really we had some German immigrants settling there, farmers. You know, one fun fact I always love to tell people is that Lakeview Township at one point was the celery-growing capital of the country. So people were growing celery like crazy. People ask a hot dog, right?
I think that's why we put celery salt on our hot dogs. Right. I can't prove that, though.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
You just say it, like, authoritatively.
People with authority.
Yeah, a little confidence.
But if you look at around Chicago, all of what we think of as sort of dense urban neighborhoods, everything outside those original city boundaries were once developments sold to people as get away from the dirty city, come out to Lakeview, Edgewater, Hyde Park. You know, these are names that nowadays would sound like a suburban subdivision because they originally were incorporated into the city in the 1890s, right before the fair.
So let me ask you, I mean, there's so much made about the last time the Cubs won the World Series, 1908. What was the saloon scene? What was the bar scene like in 1908 here in Chicago? Was it as bustling? I mean, people waiting in lines and the cover charges?
The cover charge was a whopping 50 cents.
No, and a beer was a nickel.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly bustling, right? But that's also, you got to put that in context of history.
One of the things to remember is that nowadays we have a post-prohibition saloon culture or bar and tavern culture, a lot of prohibitionist dry attitudes. Back in the day in Chicago, the main source of income for the city was liquor licenses. There weren't any property taxes. So everyone complaining about property taxes nowadays harken back to the days of no property taxes, but saloons everywhere. And these saloons were of two basic types, and this is Perry Dewis's great research, right? You had your American bars, which were run by German and Irish, more assimilated immigrants, and you had your ethnic bars, where people would speak Polish or Czech or Bohemian in neighborhoods that were dominated by those ethnic groups. So in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, you had way more bars than we have now, but they served really important social purposes.
I mean, they were really centers of information, right? If you were looking for a job for your cousin who would be coming from Poland, you'd go to the bar where people knew you, you'd share information, you'd get the latest gossip, in a sense, you start networking. I actually like to call the 19th century saloon the original Facebook, right? This is where you got all of the comings and goings and kind of reached out for help in some capacity. So the saloon, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, I mean, this was the place, not just to go drink, but to really just kind of exchange camaraderie, exchange information.
Let me ask you, I mean, and we're going to talk about this, about the idea of the quote-unquote sports bar. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, was at the time in 1908 when the Cubs were winning World Series at that time, I mean, were the bars sports-oriented? I mean, did you get the scores and were there sort of chatter and things around the idea of a Cubs game?
Absolutely. The thing to remember is back in these days, you had daily newspapers that would put out multiple editions a day. So I call that the 19th century internet. People would pick up the paper and bring it into the bar and share the box scores. Ben Hecht, the great Chicago journalist, his very first job on the Daily News was compiling the box score of that day's Cubs and Sox games, which would be on the front page of the paper. So it's 3 o'clock. The factory lets out. The ball game started at 11 a.m. or noon or 1 o'clock. And you go to the tavern on your way home, and there's the newspaper with the, that day's
I'll
box score.
Who won, right.
Obviously, we're talking before TV, much less radio, much less internet. But sports were one of the things men talked about in bars, and these are primarily male preserves. The sporting life was sort of a code term for gambling and other some other vice activities. But any bar would have in it people who knew about sports. Maybe the guy you're betting on the World Series with is in there, and he knows you, you know him. You put down a couple of 50-cent bets on the next game. It was absolutely a center, but all saloons were like that. Right. There wasn't a genre of sports bar.
Let's take a quick break, and we come back. Let's get into the genre of sports bar, when that actually happened, the idea of the TVs coming into store, and really, you know, a culture around sports. And then talk about Wrigleyville and the concept of what is considered a Chicago sports bar as opposed to a a corporatized version of such. Sure. Bill Savage, Liz Garibay in studio with me tonight. We're talking the history of saloons, taverns, and Wrigleyville as we know it. We're celebrating Cubs culture, World Series week here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. It is World Series week. Talking about Cubs culture, we're talking about saloon culture and the original sports bars here in Chicago, and then we're going to get into a little Wrigleyville talk. Bill Savage teaches literature at Northwestern and the Newberry Library. He has written the intro, and he also has done the notes for George Ade's The Old Time Saloon, which is out now in the University of Chicago Press. Liz Garibay is a bar and beer historian who's working on a new Chicago Brewseum, which needs to happen. So, in studio. All right, so let's talk about the genre of sports bar, because we talked about the saloon, and sports was obviously a big part of it. Where does the sports bar come from?
I think the sports bar probably develops in the late 70s, early 80s, when cable TV takes over the world and ESPN starts to eat everything. So, like, as I said earlier, people are always talking about sports in bars because people are talking about everything in bars, politics, jobs, local stuff. Like, the bar is kind of a liquid newspaper. Everything you would find in a newspaper, you would find in a bar. Sports bars grow up as an economic idea that if I put up more TVs than the guy next door, and I worked as a bartender for over 30 years, and I remember when a place I worked at up in Edgewater, Hamilton's, which late lamented Hamilton's, got a satellite. But, you know, this giant dish that nowadays you'd think would be like on the Starship Enterprise, and they could get in like games that other people couldn't see, and suddenly you made a lot of money. So now there's some bars I like, down on 95th Street, Tavern in the Green in Evergreen Park. They have more TVs than I have books, and I'm an English professor. I mean, I have lots of books. And that kind of idea that here's a bar you go to in order to watch sports, talk sports, consume sports as an object has its parallels, right? There's single bars. There's gay bars, right? There's bars people go to for specific social reasons. Sports is a thing that can transcend that. There's gay sports bars. I mean, multi-genre bars exist. But it's an interesting thing because it can also be something that kind of drives some people away, right? It can feel fake or ungenuine.
Yeah, and I mean, historically speaking, that has always existed, right? No matter if you're looking at 2016 or 1908 or, you know, 1850, there's always sort of been the place for you. Right. You always find your niche.
Right.
So 19th century, it would have been, I'm going to go to that Italian bar because they speak Italian and that's where I'm from. And I know I can find those newspapers there and communicate effectively and be able to share that cultural knowledge. So sports bars are no different, right? They're just a more of a recent phenomenon. And of course, everyone has their particular sport that they're into or their team. You know, all over the world.
Is there a difference between, say, a sort of a franchise or the idea of a sports bar that you can find in every different town and a Chicago sports bar?
I think there's, you know, anytime you talk about urban life, things apply across the board. In cities, there are certain kinds of bars. I think it differs in different kinds of cities. So in L.A. or Phoenix or Houston, a car city is going to be different than Chicago, a public transportation kind of city.
More like in the malls, things like that.
But I think the bigger and more important difference is bars that are oriented towards sports organically because they happen to be, say, across the street from a baseball park, like Ray's Bleachers, now Murphy's Bleachers was, and bars that are kind of imported lock, stock, and barrel from corporate headquarters in Des Moines or wherever. And those corporate sports bars are just like, you know, Applebee's is Applebee's, wherever you go.
Right.
versus places that have history and personality like Cubby Bear, Sluggers, Murphy's, Bernie's, Sports Corner, the old four corner bars around Wrigley, which back in the 80s when I started going both to bars and to Wrigley as an adult were the only bars. You had Nisei, you had Ginger Man, and it was like six bars in Wrigleyville. And it wasn't even Wrigleyville yet. It was East Lakeview.
Yeah.
Right?
That's interesting, yeah. So there wasn't, it wasn't like the bar culture that we know it to be now.
The overwhelming bro bar strip on Clark Street, bars that are only open when the Cubs are in town. Places like that did not exist yet because, you know, the Cubs averaged sometimes in the 60s and 70s under 10,000 fans a game. There wasn't the energy that's been down there since 84 where you now have, you know, right. 2 million people, 3 million people a year. So the bars grow up because the customers are there.
Yeah, Clark Street as we know it, I mean, that is definitely a 2000s sort of phenomenon, really. You know, my first sort of lesson in understanding the highs of joy and the lows of complete, utter disappointment and heartbreak came from, you know, I was 10 years old in the 84 Cubs, and in doing a lot of research around a lot of these Wrigleyville bars today and talking to owners and regulars and people that work there and people that have, you know, been in the area in the neighborhood for so long, it really is interesting to hear their perspective and knowing that, you know, in the 60s, 70s, you know, leading up to that 84 season, Lakeview, Wrigleyville was kind of a dump.
You could buy one of those two flats across from Wrigley for $10,000 in the '70s. And nobody wanted to.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, give credit to Murphy's. You know, they're the first ones to say, we can put bleachers on our roof. But if you look at historical pictures, every ballpark used to be in a city neighborhood like this. And there were lawsuits between, like, the Philadelphia A's and the people across the street who were putting bleachers on their roof during the 1910 or whatever World Series. And there's pictures from back in the 30s and 40s of people up on the roofs across from Wrigley watching. But the transformation, it's the growth of the fan base and the transformation of nightlife in that neighborhood, which I think the music culture you mentioned earlier was really an important part of. So there was already sort of a critical mass of nightlife culture there that could be expanded by the bar culture. But there's also remnants, and I shouldn't use that word, there are also still institutions.
I was going to ask, what are those institutions? I mean, we see this week we've seen just an overwhelming amount of news on what's going on in Wrigleyville, but we're not talking about the specifics. It's always just about who's got a cover charge.
Well, I'll be honest. If I was a bar owner, okay, the bar owner's down there during the regular season, their occupancy card is a joke. They jam those bars full of people. During the postseason, they've got the guy at the door, the clicker, one out, one in. They're paying attention to their occupancy card. If I was a bar owner, I would charge cover and guarantee people seats, and people who want seats will pay that. Because in the regular season, you just jam them in with a shoehorn.
Right.
And as long as the place doesn't burn down, nobody cares. But there are bars that are institutions that have been there forever, like Nisei, 65 years now, a bar founded by Japanese American immigrants who came here after World War II, after the internment camps. They didn't want to go back to California where their neighbors had basically stolen their lives. So they came to Chicago where there was industrial work. And Lakeview was an industrial neighborhood with factories and warehouses that also had bars for guys who worked in factories and warehouses. The ballpark was another workplace.
Right.
And in the old days, the Cubs players were famous for going across the street to Ray's bleachers.
Ray's is the precursor to
now Murphy's.
Yeah. What are some other bars in Wrigleyville that are gone that we don't think about anymore that were a huge part of Wrigleyville that we just don't see?
Well, you know, one of the things I think about when I see what's happening today and just sort of the explosion of people rushing to these bars is you have to give a lot of credit to some of the bar owners that were struggling in the early 80s and really just kind of invested a lot of their money and savings into the seedy neighborhood because they believed in it. So one recent bar that has gone away, I don't know if you remember Justin's on Southport.
Yeah, right.
You know, but Jim Murphy and Justin, I mean, these guys had their bars in the early 80s before that 84 season. And they really kind of just wanted to rally the community together and say, hey, come on, let's improve this area, this neighborhood. I'm going to invest in my business and hopefully get other business owners to come by. And eventually, you know, that season, I think, really saved them.
Right.
in a sense, but really it was kind of the beginnings of it all.
Do we see, will there be another, I mean, we think about the new bars that are opening up, like you talked about the Bro Bars on Clark Street where they weren't there before. Will we ever see a culture again where a bar like Ray's sticks around for 20, 30 years in a Wrigleyville? Or is this the kind of business now where it's 5 years out, next bar in, that kind of thing?
I think it depends on a couple of like bar culture business details, which include what your capitalization is, who your investors are. Notice that we're naming names here. Justin, Jim Murphy, currently Nisei is owned by like a third generation of owners. Like it's turned over a couple times. But these are guys who decided we're in this for the long haul. We're open even when the Cubs aren't in town.
Right.
And partly that's if you're not a huge room with where you got to sell 18,000 chicken wings a night to make your rent, you can afford to do that. So I think the turnover will be among the more corporate places. And genuine
Right? I mean, the rent is a huge
and
part there.
Genuine neighborhood places where people go there even when the Cubs aren't in town because it's their neighborhood bar where their friends are hanging out, where they can still keep up with the news and everything. Those places are always going to endure because those are the neighborhood bars that survive even away from Wrigleyville.
And, you know, it's these places that, like Bill said, they've really created the culture, right? It's not just a business. It's not about, you know, selling food and drink and making sure the TV, yeah, the biggest TV's around. It's really about creating community. So, mm-hmm. you know, when Bill and I go and grab a beer at Nisei, we're there with like, you know, maybe six other people in the middle of January, you know, chatting over a beer, but it's comfortable. It's our place. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's kind of just where we feel at home in a sense. So you have bars like Nisei or G-Man Tavern or Higgins over on School and Racine, and they're really kind of just neighborhood joints. They're the corner tap.
That happened to be within walking distance of a Major League ballpark because the Major League ballpark's been there longer than they have.
Right. Well, we have to have this conversation in 5 years. Once the hotel's up and everything changes in Wrigleyville, we'll see if the neighborhood taverns can keep up. Bill Savage teaches literature in Northwestern and at the Newberry Library. He has done the introduction and the notes for George Ade's The Old Time Saloon out on the University of Chicago Press. Liz Garibay is a beer and bar historian. He's working on the new Chicago Brewseum. Love to have you guys back. Thanks for being in tonight. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Justin.
Thanks.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk with Sam Panionovich, who's at the United Center. The Chicago Bulls win their first game and look pretty good doing it. It was fun to watch sort of the fourth quarter play out. You kind of get biting the nails as the Boston Celtics made a run. But Dwayne Wade,
beatdown.
Jimmy Butler, and Rajon Rondo.
Total beatdown.
They set the tone, Rob, for what this season is going to bring us, and that is 72-10.
That is until like game six when Rajon decides to go completely haywire. What? You want me to run a play?
No way. I'm not running any more plays, man.
Done. Throw my headband. I'm out of here. Stupid Chicago.
I got to say, man, I don't know. I like Robin Lopez, too. He's got a good look to him. He's got that sort of frizzy hair. This is an interesting team. Taj is he's in the starting lineup. We'll see.
They make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I they could be there.
I don't know. I just on the first day, I feel pretty positive. We'll talk to Sam about it coming up.
Me, I got a plug, special ed, I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. Three dice, CeeLo, three card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace, Bob Marley.
We're definitely paying Dwayne Wade. I'm telling you, man, 72-10. Sam Panionovich at the United Center for the Bulls. Opening night victory, 105-99 over the Boston Celtics. A big game. It started off with a Dwayne Wade jump shot, and it ended in similar fashion. Sam Panionovich, thanks for joining us. The Bulls start on a positive note.
Well, if you had the Dwayne Wade 24-foot step-back three to win it in your Bulls bingo card, come on down and pick up your cash, because that's what it was. It was a close game. It got down to 2 points in the final 2 minutes, and then Dwayne Wade silenced the Celtics bench with an actual throat slash. He took his right arm and slashed it across his neck, buried a three, and that's what propelled the Bulls to win 105-99, the second year in a row that Freddie Hoiberg has won his first game of the season.
Overall, I mean, the Bulls had a sizable lead at one point. Obviously, the Celtics were able to close in the fourth quarter, but overall, how did you feel about the opening night performance for the Bulls?
You know, I was entertained, which I think is a lot of what this front office planned to do. You know, they said they wanted to get younger and more athletic. That was the plan until you had a couple of pieces fall right into your laps.
Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, and both of those two were really, really good tonight. Wade had 22. He had 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and then you had Rondo, kind of like your floor general. He had 9 assists, only 2 turnovers. He kept the pace going. They were running pick and roll. And the Bulls made a lot of threes, which is kind of going to be their mantra this year. They took 25 and made 11 of them. But it's so strange to see a team shoot only 39% and win a game.
Yeah.
So, and because they did miss a lot of shots. They took 92, only made 36, but they got offensive rebounds. They played defense when it mattered late, and they were able to steal the deal.
One of the high points has to be the power forward play of Taj Gibson, who usually comes off the bench. He won the starting nod this season. He played well down the stretch.
Absolutely. Double-double, too. 18 points, 10 rebounds, and he sort of led the charge on the windows. I mean, the Bulls out-rebounded Boston by 20. And you look at offensive rebounds, Bulls had 18, Celtics had 3. So we talk about those lunch pail games where you put your hard hat on, get dirty around the rim. That's what they did. They protected it on both ends. They got extra chance points, and they took care of business. But it was a fun win. The fans stayed until the end. They got their Big Macs, right, 105 points. So everybody leaves here happy going into the World Series game tomorrow.
I have so many questions just because I watched the game out of the corner of my eye tonight. But it's so I really do like this team. A lot of fun characters and, as you said, entertaining. Let's talk specifically about some of those new additions. Robin Lopez, the center in the middle. You talked about the huge advantage in rebounds. How did he play tonight?
Well, you know, offensively, I think he's going to be sort of a work in progress with the system, but he's not really counted on to do a lot of the offensive, you know, carrying. He's not supposed to score 20 points a night. His job is to play tall, which he is, 7 foot, the Afro makes him about 7'3", so that's a whole lot of man out there. And, of course, he's a twin brother. His brother Brooke plays for the Nets, but Robin was just everywhere, diving after loose balls. You know, if guys came to the lane on Boston, he made sure that he gave them a shoulder, you know. No easy buckets, and I think that's something, you know, with Pau Gasol last year, not your best defender around the rim. Joakim Noah was hurt for most of the second half. They need tough guys around the rim, guys that are going to make baskets difficult on other teams and guys that are going to set the physical tone, and that's something that Robin Lopez does. I also like the game out of Michael Carter-Williams, too, the former Buck. I can't believe, you know, the Bulls had to give up Tony Snell to get this guy. I mean, that's an A-plus right now in the fleecing. Carter-Williams was good. About 18 minutes of backup point guard.
Well, I was going to ask you about the – let me ask you about the bench. Let me ask you about Carter Williams, but also Mirotic coming off the bench. How did the bench mob play tonight?
They were okay. You know, early in the season, they're going to need to knock down shots. And Nico Mirotic, I think he missed about 4 literally wide-open threes. These are shots that you make. You know, like nobody's even around them. And the Bulls are up 10, 13 points. I mean, if you make a couple of those shots, Boston doesn't claw back into this game. So I thought the bench was okay, but a lot of times when Butler and or Wade were on the bench, Boston crawled back in. Obviously that's going to happen because the talent drop off from starters to bench is pretty clear with this bunch, but they were serviceable. They didn't make too many mistakes, but that rotation is going to be something to pay attention to. I wonder who Fred Hoiberg is going to close out with.
Yeah, and let's ask the million-dollar question, which is the coexisting of Rondo, Wade, and Jimmy Butler, who we haven't mentioned. How did that play out tonight? I mean, were there times where we sort of had a clear indication of whose team this was?
Honestly, I think that angle has been sort of beaten to death, and I don't think that these guys really care whose team it is. I mean, I know Jimmy Butler, you know, wanted it to be about him for the longest period of time, and he is the superstar. He's the face of the franchise. But Jimmy did just give an interesting bite, and I tweeted it out. I can't actually say it on the radio because there was a swear word in there. But essentially what Butler says is that he looks left and he sees Rondo. He looks right and he sees Dwayne Wade. And he knows these guys are going to fight till the end of the game, and he knows that they're going to go to war. And a lot of times last year, Justin, I know you're well aware, this team quit on Fred Hoiberg. And whether it was Derrick Rose or some guys around that locker room that just weren't all in, this group appears to be all in. And I think rather than focus on whose team is it, we should focus on all of them working together toward a common goal. And they did that tonight.
Let me ask you this, because maybe it's not necessarily about the alpha part of this, of whose team it is. But how do they coexist? Because you've got Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade that play very similar in the way that they're both sort of big shooting guards. How do they coexist on the floor? I mean, what we saw tonight, how was their spacing? How was the ball distribution? What, did it seem like there was chemistry among the starters for the Bulls?
Yeah, it was
It was all right. I give it maybe a 7 out of 10 on chemistry, and that should hopefully grow over the course of the year. I did like the way the ball moved side to side. It didn't just stick on one end of the floor. And with a guy like Rondo, he's not so much concerned about the amount of shots he's going to get. He likes to set people up. So chemistry-wise, Rondo's going to drive around. He's going to get some screens. He's going to have guys low to the basket. But he's sort of setting everybody up. And when you have guys that are unselfish like Butler and Wade who can both create, it's actually not that big of a deal. Now, I don't know if they're going to be shooting all that well for the entire season. Like we said, only 40% mm-hmm. tonight and they win. But if the shots go in, they will win. That is an absolute fact.
No, it's in only one game, and we know that the NBA doesn't really count till Christmas time. But, you know, the Boston Celtics are a team on the rise, a team that a lot have said, you know, could be as up the 3 seed or 2 seed even, if you will. I mean, they're on the rise. They're not playing sort of a pancake here. I mean, this is a team that a lot of people say could go deep into the playoffs.
Boston's certainly one of the better teams in the playoffs last year. In fact, Dwayne Wade said after the game he loves to watch Boston when they're not playing. He loves to watch them on League Pass. A lot of exciting young players, and they play like a team, and that falls from the direction of their head coach, Brad Stevens. This is certainly a good group. This is a top 5 team in the East, but let's not get worked up, JK. It's one game. The Bulls did beat Cleveland last year in the season opener, and they missed the playoffs. So,
no, I'm going all in.
One game at a time. No. Yeah, well, I know you
nope,
are.
And all
I didn't
in.
Know that the NBA didn't start till Christmas either. Thanks for that. What am I doing here? Am I getting paid?
You know, come on, man. Like, this is a long season. All right, so for the Chicago Bulls, what's next for them? I mean, the season begins. The question marks really around the rotation. I mean, how long does it take for a team to work out who's on the floor at the right times? What's the right combination of players when you talk about coming off the bench, that kind of thing?
Right. I always look at who finishes the game. I think that's always more important than who's going to start. And I believe in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes left, it was Rondo, Butler, Wade, Mirotić, and Gibson. So they really went without a true center, which a lot of NBA teams are going toward. Essentially, Gibson's playing your 5, and Mirotić was the 4, even though he's sort of like a revolving door defensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But they're going to try and space it out. They're going to go small, and they're going to go with guards that have long wingspans that can defend. And they like that stretch 4, whether it's Mirotić or McDermott or whoever it is out there, to pull the big away from the basket. So it's going to be a work in progress. I think it'll be mix and match a lot of times, but I promise you, you're going to see the big 3, Rondo, Wade, and Butler, and then it's going to be a combination of the other guys to fill it out.
Sam Panionovich reporting on the possible undefeated Chicago Bulls. We'll see. It's early. They're 105-99 win over the Celtics at the UC tonight. Sam, thanks for the update.
You got it. See ya.
Programming notes, Chicago Blackhawks on tomorrow night. They'll be in New Jersey. Take on the Devils. It's Kevin Smith's team, right? Or is he an Islander guy? I feel like it's one of the two. He's just always sort of has one of the jerseys on. All right, so we will not be on tomorrow night. But here's what's going to happen. Because the True Blue Playoff Plus will also be, because the Cubs, of course, in Game 3 of the World Series at Wrigley Field. And also, we got Preps Plus Chicago, which is the high school football roundup that is also on tomorrow. So there's a lot going on here when it comes to Chicago sports on 720 WGN. We'll be all over it. Just pay attention. They'll sort of weave it and have everything ready to go in terms of post game and of course, the broadcast of the Blackhawks game. And we will be out on Halloween as well, Pete and I both. We just got to get dressed up. I don't want to miss all this candy. No. Yeah, but we'll be back next week. A huge week, and I'm super excited. I really truly feel like the Cubs have a chance to finish this thing out at Wrigley Field. So we'll see. Pete doesn't like that.
I like it.
The superstitious Cubs fans.
They're beating, win 3 games in a row right at home, huh?
I know that, you know, no one believes me, but Corey Kluber is hittable. I will say this. I was thinking about this last night. Madison Bumgarner. Everyone's like, there's no way they could beat Madison Bumgarner. They chased him in 3 innings. Clayton Kershaw pitched an unbelievable game. He came back out. No way. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Kershaw wins that game.
Mm-hmm.
They chased Kershaw in, 4 or 5 innings?
Yeah.
Corey Kluber has a great game. Corey Kluber's got to come back, and he's got to pitch on the road. I don't think it's a slam dunk that Corey Kluber gets the win for Cleveland at Wrigley Field. I think that the Cubs are just too talented. They're young, and they quickly pick up, oh, this is how this guy did. This is how he goes.
Yeah, and you know this Indians team. Yeah. Sorry, Rob.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. And Justin has been watching this Indians team, you know, faces White Sox, and he knows.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're here, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm just not an Indians fan. As an AL Central fan, I thought this year was the Tigers to beat, and also the Royals. The Royals played very strange in the way that they were still pretty – they're a very talented team, but they just underachieved. That's, you could tell they're tired of winning. They're tired of winning. The Cleveland Indians, though, not my cup of tea. But the I feel like Josh Tomlin, Corey Kluber, and Trevor Bauer again? Is that what it would be? I don't know.
I just want to say right now for the record, since the series is tied at one game apiece, I said to a friend – which can be verified prior to the series, that they'll lose the first game and win the next four.
Ah,
I made that prediction.
I like that.
Martyr knows what's up.
It was just, you know.
That's the promo. That's the promo that we need to take. Martyr knows what's up.
It's the man that's credited with the best nickname of the Cubs roster.
That's right.
Dexter Free Range.
Free Range.
He knows.
Well, news, nighttime, Martyr knows what's up. Get Duffy on it. I swear we got a promo
on
right
on All here. Sports, 720 WGN.
I know, right? Patty Vasquez coming up next here on 720 WGN. She gets her regular time slot back. There's so much. I mean, it's, like, the times are so off and everything's around when we're talking about post-game and putting all this together. But a tremendous, tremendous weekend ahead, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we'll have all the pre- and post-game and Northwestern football. Huge game. This is the week they go to Ohio State, right?
I think that's what the problem
is. And I was annoyed because Ohio State, of course, lost to Penn State. And I'm like, no, man.
Get on the upset.
I don't want the upset to be the next week. And I think Northwestern could do something. But it's hard when you're coming off an upset because now they're going to be all ready to go, re-inspired, if you will, in Ohio State. But, I mean, how about it? I mean, they've played well. They're back up on top. The Northwestern Wildcats got a little winning streak going. So.
Love it.
Yeah. Illinois? Not so much. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. Patty Vasquez coming up next. We will be back next week sometime.
I don't even know. I think it's Wednesday.
Da-na-na, da-na-na.
All right, well, go Cubs. Have a great weekend.
I'll miss you guys.
Yeah, man.
That's, and Peep.
Yeah, right.
Whenever I see you again.
We'll see you around. Next time you see you, I'm going to change my facial hair. Okay. I might go with a Schwarber.
The Schwarbs?
The Schwarber.
Please don't do that.
Start wearing, like, 1990s clothes and have a Schwarber, like, a little half goatee. I mean, sweet gig.